This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 7 of the Special Relations Podcast. We're back with you once again with our Britishness, our football chat, and maybe we'll even set aside some time to talk some wrestling with you. As always, I am the good lady's favourite podcaster, Callum McDougall, and I have not come alone, as I have the usual suspects joining me again tonight. Firstly, we have the powerhouse of the Potteries. Not to be confused with MJF's muscle, it's Ben Wardlock. Ben, good evening.
I like that. I've never been described as a powerhouse before. Have I made the good lady's top three, if you're her favourite?
she does like Tim, because Tim keeps mentioning the good lady. But you could be up there.
Oh, excellent. I don't mind being third or fourth. The cable, that's fine.
Everyone at Place to Be Nations are joint second.
That is a very good diplomatic answer. I like that.
Place to Be Nation and all sister podcast feeds. So, how's things, Benny? All good?
All good. Everything's sort of settled down a bit now. So, people have stopped going mad and buying toilet rolls and milk and bread. And we've actually got a full shop again now. So, that's quite nice.
Lovely. I love how we've gone from stockpiling them all to just no one's buying them. We've just got shelves full of toilet paper. It's like everyone needed it before and now no one needs it. We're just not going to the toilet anymore.
I don't know if it's the same in America, but it's very dystopian now. So you've got you've got people like queuing up outside, and it's all, you know, we're all one way. It's like a proper one way system.
Well, I went to the shops earlier on, and there was only one place that was queued out, and it was the off license. Or to our American listeners, the liquor store, the only place that had a queue outside it.
Well, our shop is literally right next door to a Wright Pie, which is a local version of Greg's. I'm trying to think of the American equivalent. So it's basically like fast food, just a little takeaway, you know, so pie, sausage rolls, that kind of thing.
It's like a fast food bakery.
Yes, there we go. And that they are, the queue is ridiculous. Like, they open at 9 o'clock now, and the queue is absolutely, like, stupid.
Well, I tell you, see, when Greg's opens back up, I am going to be like a pig in you know what. It will be like the hog pen match. I will be there. I'll be elbowing old people and children out the way so I can get my first steak bake.
Anyway, the KFCs have just started opening now. We aren't lucky enough to have a McDonald's open yet. I think that's a bit further down south, but we're slowly getting our takeaways back, damn it.
No, we've not had anything, unfortunately, or fortunately for my waistline, I would say. But I could talk to you about pasties all night, Ben, but it wouldn't be fair to the rest of the call.
That is very true.
So also joining us tonight is a man whose encyclopedic knowledge about anything you ask him is so good that when I mentioned that Do the Batman got to number one in the UK, he instantly told me what day it got to number one. He's the host of Senior Video on this here Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network. It is Rory McNamara. Rory, how are you?
Good evening, everybody. Pro wrestling trivia notwithstanding.
Well, to be fair, you had said it with the best of intentions.
I had a powerhouse breathing down my neck.
You did have a powerhouse breathing down your neck, and you also had Ryan Everett, who, I mean, there's encyclopedic knowledge, and then there's Rain Man.
But Simpsons UK singles, I'm your man.
Anybody looking to go on place on Body Press You Look, by the way, don't do it on like waking up with 10 minutes to go, or in Rory's case, a minute to go. You know, make sure you've got a bit of prep time.
I was woken up by the Skype call, and a minute later we were on the air, and 45 minutes later I was sackcloth and ashes job, really.
There's a term up here, I don't know if it's made its way down to yourselves yet, boys, but the technical term, I think, for a beating like that is pumped.
I settled for shoeing, which I thought was a sensible description.
Anyway, how's things, sir?
Nice to be here, as always.
Good stuff. And also tonight we have a very special guest joining us. Before the coronavirus, this man was a podcast virgin, but since then, he's joined the Cracker Barrel gang, visited the Laughing Theatre, climbed aboard the mothership, and stood behind the Great Debate podium. And now, he's flaunting the travel ban to come across the pond and join us tonight. He's an actual American, and not just Ben playing another character in the way he does with Rory. It's Sean Kidd. Sean, good evening.
Hey, good evening, man. That intro, if I actually charged for all the stuff I did, I'd be a pro whore. That's pretty good. That was a good intro. Thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. I felt we should note all of your accomplishments in such a short space of time.
Well, it's much appreciated. These have been a lot of fun, and I'm really glad to be on this one for sure with you guys, because this is also one of my favorite pods, and with some really fine gentlemen too. So I'm happy to be here. And by the way, you're talking about your fast food stuff, KFC, McDonald's. I don't know what you guys are thinking. You're not thinking about the real good fast food. So I'm a little offended by what the fast food we're talking. Although those sausage rolls sound really, really good. So I need to get
They are, believe me.
Yeah. Oh, you are missing out, my friend.
Well, you know, you need to find a way to freeze that shit and get it over here. So
How well would a Greg sausage roll travel by airmail? I think this is something we should investigate.
You can test the theory if you like.
Well, there is we're talking about Greg's. There is a Taco Bell in Glasgow right next door to a Greg's, the Baker's. So that's the one that's up the Moderate Hill, not in the stabby place. So if I can ever bring myself to exercise, that's the first place I'm going.
Well, exercise and Taco Bell go hand in hand, right?
I would say so.
You walk there, you get it, you eat it, and you walk home, and you just walked off, what, maybe a calorie of it? Yeah, you're good.
that's the lettuce on the top of my taco, is it not?
Yeah.
There we go. But anyway, Sean, thanks for joining us tonight. It's a pleasure having you on.
Yep, I'm a pleasure to be here.
All right, so as our resident Dusty Rhodes, our booker man himself, goes through normally, we have got some absolutely excellent things to come with you for the next more than 10 minutes, less than how long it took us to go through our GWWE list at the start of the year. So as always, we'll start off with a serious tone. Because it all descends into chaos at that point there. And what can be more serious than the great debate of WrestleMania 17 against WrestleMania 19?
No. Later.
Oh. Save it.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, that's what I get for trying to take your job, Ben. So, Ben, what do we have on plate for the good people?
Okay, so for the good people, I wanted to talk a little bit about the whole coronavirus and the WWE and Florida and AEW's handling of it, because from an outsider looking in, I just think it's been a bit of a farce. I don't know how the rest of you are feeling about it.
How do you mean? In what way a farce? Expand.
I will expand. So, we've basically been in lockdown for the best part of 2 months now, Jasmine. I think I'm right in that.
Yes.
The reason I keep hearing about why the TV is having to continue is to fulfill these TV contracts, correct? So, that's the big reason. Yeah,
that's the theory, yes.
That's the theory, right. Okay. So those big contracts are giving them £1 billion, £2 billion worth of money, correct? Vince and Triple H and Stephanie and Shane, they're all worth quite a bit of money themselves. And yet they felt the need to fulfill these contracts by firing a bunch of staff. Now, the whys and wherefore of the staff that have been fired, you know, we could all sit here and say, yeah, they should have gone a long time ago. That's not my issue. The timing of it is my issue. These are, you know, this is unsure times. These are people's lives. You know, their lives, their livelihood, however you want to phrase it. They've got families. You know, we're all nervous. And the way the company have handled it has been absolutely ridiculous from an outsider looking in.
I, I'll go first on that. So, you know, in running a business, which I do, believe it or not, I don't know who pays me that, they're insane, but I kind of see both sides of the equation. So you have a healthy business, you know, which WWE has had a really healthy business, right? So to your point, I think when you see them doing layoffs and cutting wrestlers, that quite honestly, they could have cut pre-coronavirus just for the fact that, you know, like you said, is, well, we could talk about that, but reality is they waited until they had coronavirus to do it, which, right, it seems really wrong and petty considering that the talent they let go probably should have been let go earlier when they were doing really well. I feel like in their business, the cuts probably weren't necessary. Whereas I see like in other businesses where it might be, like if you're in the airline industry, you're in the cruise line industry, you're in industries like that, in the pro wrestling industry, and as much money as they made off contracts, off of their Saudi deals, the timing of it is very suspicious, even though the talent they let go should have been let go, but the timing was really wrong and set a bad precedent. And besides, Vince McMahon looks like he already died from coronavirus, so I don't know why he's letting people go anyway. So that's kind of my take. I get the business balance, but I think the WWE's timing was wrong on it, and they probably, it wasn't really a necessity for them to do that based on their financial health. That's my take.
I totally agree with that. I mean, from a business point of view, I see the need to cut people. Firings and sackings happen all the time in business. We know that. It's the moralistic and the timing I have a problem with.
I agree with you on that, for sure.
I mean, this was historically the time that they always did their mass exodus of, or their mass cull. But as you're saying, they're a financially healthy company. They've not done these mass culls in years. Maybe since, I can't remember that. Certainly in the post network years, I can't remember the last time they've done it.
I can't remember one like this since the NXT era started.
No,
it's been a long time. Really long.
They're using it as an excuse. They kind of set their stall out when they were keeping people and signing them to massive contracts when AEW started because they didn't want them to go. And then they're going back on it and going, we've got no use for them and we're paying them quite a substantial amount of money. Here's a reasonably good excuse to give them the heave-ho. And the guys that they've sacked, bar one or two, and the guys in the main event did it, went through them all. In detail, a lot of them will be able to. A lot of them will get. What's the word I'm trying to look for? They'll get sucked up. They'll get brought into other companies. No problem at all. Won't be in WWE money, but they'll still be able to make a living, and that's probably a good reason as to why we've got so many. So many companies that are viable places to work now, not just one.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. Like if you look at the talent they let go, a lot of them, you know, you could see the AEW fit, you could see the Ring of Honor fit, you can see the Impact fit, and a lot of them will fit in well. And quite honestly, a lot of the ones that were let go are probably happy to be let go, right? You know, you see the whole thing online now with the Revival and what they were doing, and you know, it looks like they're probably going to AEW, but. For me, the morality of the WWE letting them go now in a time that everybody's in financial their impairment, the wrestlers themselves that lost their job, you don't know what their financial statuses are. The timing for them is really bad considering, hey, we're letting you go because we're making a financial cut because of coronavirus. That's bullshit. That's not why they let them go. They let them go. They just picked that time to do it, which was really, really shitty in my opinion. So.
Aye, and it was extremely transparent that's what they were doing, and that's the thing that's probably more grating on a lot of people as well, is that they are using it as an excuse when everybody in their right mind will know that it's not. They just wanted to get rid of these people because they've probably regretted putting them on these massive contracts. And the thing about having the let them go, everyone's got a 90-day no compete, but that's not even in play anymore either, because who knows when they'll actually get back to being able to be in the ring. 90 days takes us to when? Mid-July? Mid-August? I
don't even know if they have a 90-day clause for this round of cuts. I don't know if they do or not.
Is it just
read something that they didn't. Yeah.
I think I thought the Revival got a full release when that statement got a full you can go now anywhere.
Well, maybe that's the one good thing that they've done, because they don't know when they'll actually be able to compete again. So they've just gone, if you compete earlier, fine. If not, then you could be looking. I heard yesterday that you might not get any sporting events until early 2021. And that could be an absolute.
You go to Florida, which we'll talk about. So.
Carry on, Ben.
I was going to say, let's face it. It's only, sorry for the sports reference already, Sean, but it's only really been the Premier League in England that's done a worse job at handling this.
The what league?
There we go.
Sorry.
That's football. Soccer for you, Sean.
Oh, okay, yes. Okay. Yeah, I know those.
The thing that's also annoyed me, and away from the reprehensible conduct of Vince McMahon and the like, is that the closed arena shows with no fans. Apparently, it's okay for AEW to do it, but it's utterly, utterly reprehensible that WWE do it. It's amazing that, isn't it?
Are you accusing pro wrestling fans of whataboutery, Mr. McDougal? Tut.
Bias.
I'm not accusing whataboutery, Mr. McNamara. I'm just thinking that I was always under the impression that the sun rose in the east and set in the west. But apparently, the sun actually rises and sets out of Cody Rhodes' arse.
He actually called himself 3-star Cody on air 2 weeks ago. Come on, he understands us, man.
And that's another thing.
I take it you're not a Cody fan based on that statement.
You would be entirely correct, Mr. Kidd. I think it's horribly overblown. And I also think that Cody helps create said overblownness. He hides behind this aura of, oh, look at me, just poor little put upon Cody. He knows full well what he's doing. And people fall for it.
Yeah, Cody, you guys are right about Cody for sure. And he does try to come across as a good guy, but he is a businessman. And yeah, he is a little fake. I get it. I sure get it.
Love that neck tattoo, though. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. But I like the sun rising in his ass. That's really good. that comment popped me. Thank you for that.
You're very welcome. Don't get me wrong. I really do like Cody. I've had the pleasure of talking to him for all of 30 seconds when I got a photo opportunity with him at Ring of Honor. He does seem like a really nice guy. And I've only ever cried twice at a wrestling match, and both of them he was involved in. So I shed a tear when he won the NWA title at All In, and the match with Dustin at Double or Nothing. I was well oiled for both of them, but that might have contributed to it. But I really do like him. But what I don't like is the fact that him and his pals can't do any wrong, despite them acting exactly the same way as the big evil man sitting in his ivory Titan tower in Stamford.
They're still charging full whack for a pay-per-view next week.
Hmm? Yes.
$60, I believe.
You are joking.
I believe so. If I'm wrong, by all means, write in, but I think it's going to be standard full price.
Yeah, it's good. I haven't looked at the price, but I know they're doing their pay-per-view in Florida. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I think they were talking about like Florida is open. I think by next week is opening up to a capacity. So I think there's been talk about whether they're going to actually have an audience there or not, which would be interesting. It would be great to see a show with wrestling with an audience as long as they get separated. But there's definitely a double standard in how we view WWE and what they do in Florida Performance Center versus AEW. I think, to your point, I'll use your quote on Cody Rhodes. I think AEW has a little has a shining sun coming out of their ass, too.
So. Just to wrap up on this, I've just been to the reputable source that is healedbynature.com. So obviously take what I'm about to say as gospel. But in-ring talent for Raw and SmackDown bound by a 90-day non-compete clause, and it's only 30 days for NXT. And they've got a full list here of everybody affected. I didn't even know this. Did you know that Kerwin Silfies was one of the people who got the job?
Yeah.
How long has he been there?
Well,
Silfies has probably been there longer, hasn't he? Are we talking mid-80s?
Was
he not the director on WrestleMania 1?
Right.
Wow.
It's nothing sacred. Is no body sacred? It would appear not.
And here is us thinking that the day that Jim Johnson got released could be the worst day.
and just to piggyback on what you said before, Cal, you're telling me you didn't cry when your boy won the title the other week?
No, I was far too nervous. It was just a sense of relief. I'm not saying that I haven't cried since, but I didn't cry at the time.
Okay.
The champion of an empty arena. Yeah.
But he's our champion. Sean, have you not seen him just look directly into the camera and talk to you? He's not talking to us. He's talking directly to you, Sean.
I am a big fan of Drew McIntyre and have been for years. And I think it's a tragedy he doesn't have an audience to be a champ in front of, to be honest with you. So,
am I the only one as well who's seen them photos of him on the WWE Network and I never want him to smile ever again? That's a man who should not be smiling.
Well, here's the thing, and I know we're getting off topic. I'm sorry. Drew, like, I started getting into Drew really big when he was the Impact champion in TNA.
Yes.
Some of the last few that watched TNA, probably. then he was up and gone, and he came to NXT. I was so happy he won the title. Then he got hurt. So when he came over to the main roster, I was stoked, and I'm glad he won the title. I wish he had had a better audience because he deserves better. He really is great. So.
Yep.
The only thing the empty arena shows has given us is the return of trash talking. That is the only thing it's given us.
Yep.
We talked about this in one of the chats, didn't we, Ben? I think it added at least an extra, possibly half a star to the Owens-Rollins match at what we are kind of calling WrestleMania. I know JT even refuses to acknowledge it, and he's got a point. But that became one of the top... I didn't think in-ring it was any particular great shakes, but hearing them narrate the story as they went definitely added something to it, in my opinion.
And it did. It was something similar in the Charlotte Rhea match as well. There was a lot of trash talking there going on.
There's a lot of trash talk. A lot of trash talking of Charlotte going on between Sean as well.
I noticed you did that away from Jenny though.
Of course, we're not stupid.
Yeah, I definitely have some thoughts on. Anyway, I think arguably that the promos and build to matches have actually been better because there's not really a choice, but nobody cares. That's the tragedy.
That's the major issue. The lack of any kind of caring.
Yeah. Yep.
I didn't know there was a show on Sunday until somebody said Tuesday. I was like, all right, okay.
Yes, from WWE headquarters. That itself is worth the shit show to watch.
I shudder to think.
So shall we move on to the next segment?
Yes. Mystery segments.
Yes, so our next segment is the Rory's random and secret silliness. Although it's not much of a secret because the only real silliness is that some people wish to debate WrestleMania 17 versus WrestleMania 19.
Coming up later.
How random would that be, after all?
Who would ever have that debate?
Save the best for last.
Absolutely.
Oh, thanks. Me up. Oh, yeah, so Rory's random silliness is this... Would you even call it a feature, this segment, this part of the show, has now found itself being dubbed... I'm not entirely sure I accept the premise of the title, but who am I to argue with our ideas, Matt, Mr. Locke? Oh, yes. Now, today's Rory Random Silliness. I'm going to throw this one open to the floor, and we're all going to talk about, because it applies to 75% of us in this room right now, and that is something I imagine maybe even 75% of our listeners have been doing for quite some time, and that is working from home. Everybody working from home. Yes, I have been doing this for the current situation for the last 2 or 3 weeks now, after 4 weeks of furlough, and I am not sure whether I'm used to working from home now or not. Okay, if I was not working from home tomorrow, for example, it is unlikely I would still be up at what is 10 minutes past 10 here in the UK on what we deem a school night doing a professional wrestling podcast because, you know, I need my beauty sleep, I do. But here I am nevertheless. So I get up now at about 8 a.m. every day, I know, sorry, and I, you know, do what you do when you wake up at 8 a.m., just leave that hanging in the air. Make God, I make tea, of course, what do you think I meant? And by 23 minutes past 8, I've staggered back upstairs to my home office, which is just a laptop and a keyboard and a mouse. It still counts. Cup of tea, of course, drooping in my hand. I have got underwear on at this point, I hasten to add, if you really want to complete the image, but probably not much more than that. And I just press the on button on my laptop and I get used or sat down and prepared for 8.5 hours of just typing the word yep in Skype to everybody. For a bit of a change of pace, I will sometimes put a capital letter on the Y. If I'm feeling really adventurous, I'll sometimes put an exclamation point after the P to really kick things into gear. But I tell you what, I am fucked off with, and the present company utterly fucked off with every single Skype ringtone. They live with me wherever I go. Dee dee ding, dee 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 is one, and the other one, dee 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 dee. Did it? How I haven't taken the laptop with a fucking axe, I don't know. And yes, I do own an axe, or at least I do now.
Is that why you do all the calling out when we do this?
Rumbled. Look, working from home does have its perks, despite that. I do like the fact that I don't get some tosser coming up to my desk every 5 minutes asking me. You know, I take it we've all seen the film Office Space, right? Yes, we have. It is like that. Yes. No. Even in offices here in the UK, it really is a case of, did you get the memo, TPS reports, all that. 10, 15 minutes, people ask you that. Just leave me alone and get on with my fucking work. And of course, the best thing about it here is some people are only contacting you by email or indeed by the dreaded Skype. You can ignore them. When someone comes up to your desk and says, Rory, can I have a quick word? You can't really turn your back on them, as tempting as it might be. Here, you could just see the little yellow thing flicking at the bottom of the screen and you could do sod all about it for 20 minutes. So, yes, I'm going to miss this working from home lark if it is ever taken away from us. Gentlemen and Ben, over to you.
Man, good luck following that rant. Wow. Good luck, man.
That's been brewing, well, that's been brewing you, for a while, that one, I can tell you.
Well, if you two are the two who are working from home, I will let you two take the floor on this.
Well, I'm technically not working from home. I'm working kind of at home and not. You know, I go to work about 2 or 3 days a week. But I will tell you, when working at home, it's the shits. I am tired of the conference calls. And, you know, you brought up Skype. I'm also tired of Zoom. I'm also tired of Microsoft Teams. I am tired of 4 or 5 calls in a day for random stuff that doesn't need to have. So my point is, why are we having calls about these things now when we didn't pre-COVID, right? So it's just nonstop. You know, we even do happy hours, like happy hour calls on Zoom. And I'm like, I have a happy hour to not drink with you people. I don't want to drink my Whistle Pig whiskey. And, you know, and half these, you know what I do sometimes on these calls? I imagine, what if I just dropped a random picture of Brian Knobs?
There we go.
And I imagine how great that moment would be if I wouldn't get on. So I don't do it, but it's just petty. I enjoy the time. And yes, I know people are scared. And I'm not one of those that have had the fear of going out in public. I do the things with the gloves. I do the masks. It's actually great to go out when I can, just based on the monotony of sitting in the office on the 3 days a week that I do. And that's my little rant.
It's only really this week that I've sort of found that the working from home can be a bit samey. And it's only because I've just got a bit hacked off with all the stuff that's on my to-do list. The stuff that I was putting off whilst I was in the office, I've now got a reason that I can do it, and I just can't be bothered. So it's actually quite a good thing though. So it can take me anywhere from 40 minutes to 2 hours to get to work, depending on where I'm coming from and where I'm going. So the fact that I've got a 5-second commute from bed to the dining room table is wonderful. But the only pain is that I've one of my One of the project managers that I work with wants a roll call every morning for 8:30. So I need to get up and I need to log in and I need to do a roll call. Morning, still working from home today. Thanks very much, Callum. Or I'll be on that call later on. Thanks very much, Callum. This is so I'll drag myself out of bed. I'll then take myself back to bed sometimes, or I'll go in the shower at that point. I don't start my day, working day. My working day till about 9 o'clock most mornings. It's quite good. And then I go for a nap, maybe about 1 o'clock. That's quite good. I say I come in to chill, put the PlayStation on. I just nap. It's wonderful. So as you can see, I'm not taking to this working from home at all.
Well, it sounds to me, listening to the three of you, like the novelty value has sort of started to go this week or this last week or so.
It's South. What I did not touch on is the positive at all, because I want to be funny and not like normal, right? So the good part of it, I travel all the time for work. You know, I mean, in 15 years, I travel 3 days a week and I'm home 2 days, or I travel about 3 or 4 days a week. I'm usually home 2 days a week, something like that. But the last 4 weeks, the good part of it is I've been home. I've gotten to see my family more than I've seen in 15 years. Yeah. So there is good to it from a personal standpoint. I'm just saying from a work standpoint, it's just,
I can see that from the personal side is good. I'm finding that I'm a lot more busier on my work because people know that you, or people think you've got all the time in the world because you're working from home. But it's been good. So I've been in lockdown with a good lady. But a backstory, we first met when we were working together, so it's been quite good. She's working at the dining room table with me, so it's been quite good working with her again. She might think differently, but it's been quite fun. We've been quite good at getting each other through it. But yeah, the novelty I think is starting to wear off for both of us.
So for me, it's sort of been, I'm sort of like the inverse of Sean, because obviously I've not been able to see my family or my friends for six and a half weeks now. So I actually find Zoom a bit of a blessing, I'm not going to lie. work has focused the brain. So, you know, I've been able to get out the house and be able to do things. And my days off have been like genuine days off where I've been doing stuff. Like, I think I said it in one of the chats before, things like having a sofa day. I am never going to take a sofa day for granted ever again. Just sitting on the sofa and doing nothing but watching films or DVD box sets. That is like a joy that we should all cherish, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I cherish certain joys. You know, I said I'm happy to have my family, but I'm sure they're ready for me to go back to work, right? So.
They've had enough of dad around the house.
Yeah, when you've been married for 15 years, and for 15 of those years, you're only home 2 days a week. That makes for a healthy. So now what I do, and the reason why I do so much podcasting, is to stay away from my wife so I could stay married, and I just do podcasting when I'm not working. That's what I do.
Noted.
The other ironic part of it is my quasi-social diary has become a lot fuller during lockdown. So obviously I'm doing this with you guys. I've done other podcasts. I'm doing, you know, quizzes with friends. I'm doing, you know, Skype calls with family. I'm doing, you know, Zoom calls with my uni friends. I we don't see or talk to each other sometimes for like 5-6 months, and now it's like, oh yeah, we'll be talking to each other every week now. It's like, okay.
That's what I said. Like, work wise it sucks, but personal wise it's opened up like a whole new avenue of things, which is really cool. So
I'm the same as you, Ben. I've got family that stay down in Gloucester, which, for people who don't know the geography of the UK, is about 400 miles from me. And we only see them twice, three times a year at the very most. Mm. But we've been doing Zoom calls every Sunday for the last for the last 4 weeks. So it's been good. We're quite lucky in the fact that technology can help you do that.
Well, let's be fair. I mean, we were talking sort of about the bad qualities in the previous segment. This whole thing has shown the worst and best of people off in so many ways. you know, just look at Tom Moore. I mean, if you've not heard about this guy, Sean, he's unbelievable. He's, you know, he's 100 years old. He's raised 33 million quid now, is it? He's raised?
Yeah, about that.
£33 million for the NHS, just, and I say all in inverted quotation marks because he is 100, but all he's done is walk around his house or walk around the garden. But it's just been, the story has just took off in such a way, and he's such a nice bloke, even if he does like Michael Ball, and you know, we'll forget that, but it's such a lovely thing, and it's just the way that everybody's come together. It's just beautiful.
The latest total for Captain Tom is, oh, something just popped up, £32,796,275.
And he's raised that, Sean, in about 2 weeks, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, because he wanted to do 100 laps of his house before his 100th birthday.
And he was hoping to raise a grand.
It's not bad, is it?
He is also currently number one in the charts right now. With version of You'll Never Walk Alone with the aforementioned Michael Ball.
So he was number one. I'm going to correct Mr. Charps here. I can't believe it.
I've really paid any serious attention to them ever since Downloads came in 2005 and they stopped broadcasting it from. Anyway, carry on.
That's the Batman to number one.
The all-star version of Times Like These did it. So it has been like two Corona songs.
I think I'm going to have to correct you there.
Oh.
I thought that wasn't.
What thing are we on?
That wasn't number one on the official charts. Remember they're announced on a Friday now.
Ah. Sorry about this, Sean. We're debating music over here now.
It's okay. I'm treating it like it's football. You're good.
Okay.
No, you are. I apologise. You are quite correct, Benjamin. It is number one now. The Times Like These cover by the Live Lounge All Stars. You'll Never Walk Alone dropped to 21 this week, actually.
Yeah, and I've got an issue with that song. I like Coldplay, so you know, I just want to put it out there. That last line. So they managed to get Dave Grohl to do the song, right? That last line is
the name of the song. You Never Walk Alone.
That's That was the song that Uncle Tom did, Sean.
Isn't that Batista's theme song? Like, now you're talking my game. Now I know what you're talking about. Did I fuck up? Sorry, guys.
You're okay. You're okay. All I was going to say is, if you had the choice of Dave Grohl on a Dave Grohl song or Chris Martin, who are you going to pick?
I don't know. Dave Grohl.
Well, I would hope so. Rant over, carry on.
Chris Martin, isn't that the guy that names his kids after fruit?
That is the guy that names his kid after fruit.
Yeah, he automatically gets eliminated from that.
I'm just, I can just, all I am picturing now is Captain Tom walking around his house with Josie Scott singing Superstar at him.
All I've got the image now is Uncle Tom walking around his garden and then doing the gun salute.
Captain Tom.
Captain Tom, not Uncle Tom, Ben.
Captain Tom.
That discussion right now.
Sorry, Captain Tom.
Let's save that one for another podcast, shall we? Just so we don't get kicked off the air again, I'm going to try and bring this one back. So I'm going to make sure now for the next 60 seconds, nobody in the US is going to listen to make sure we do carry on doing this show. Have you seen the clip of Captain Tom Moore from the 1983 Christmas edition of Blankety Blank that's been doing the rounds?
No, I have not.
And you thought sausage rolls was a UK-specific reference, everybody, and the ones we've dropped in our previous seven shows. Blankety, how on earth could I describe Blankety Blank to a US audience? Wonder what the equivalent of it would be. Basically, the premise of the show was it had two contestants and about six B-list celebrities, and they had to give the most popular answer or a specific answer to a question, and they had to guess the same as you or something.
It is based on the American game show Match Game, apparently.
That's why you come in, Sean, and say, oh, yeah, Match Game.
That is a tremendous game show. My wife watches it all the time.
It's still going.
Yeah, she watches the Game Show Network constantly.
Ah, so that's why the final round was called a Super Match Game, Super Match Game, Super Match.
Do they win a checkbook and pen?
And pen. There we go. Now we're back.
This show is an education.
It is. I've learned a lot already.
Yeah, because I don't know if it was the same in America, but all the questions were sort of innuendo laden over here.
Yeah, so that's the, how they match game too. It's all innuendo. Okay. And, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, particularly when it was presented by Les Dawson, less so in the Terry Wogan.
Well, it's
you wouldn't get that out of Terry.
It's a ridiculous show because it's an innuendo guess, and none of the innuendo guesses are what they should be, because if it were really great, it'd be X-rated and be the greatest show of all time. So.
From working
like
from home.
Almost every time there's a blank in the question, it should be the F word, and it never is. But anyway, I digress.
That's fine. From working from home to a game show until a minute ago I had never heard of in 10 easy minutes.
I would say that is a great transition of what I think. That's just awesome. We could talk about whatever the hell we want.
We truly are the special relations podcast, aren't we?
That is, I love how we say that we've got segments and they've got a theme to them, because it just descends into chaos half the time. I think
tangents are our middle name.
Exactly. The special tangent relations.
This is why we need focused topics to discuss. Like, for example, comparing and contrasting WrestleMania 17. I'm doing it now.
Later.
Sorry.
I think we should go for a break just now.
So, oh, do you really?
Yes, I do.
Yes, so, Mr. McDougal.
Yes. Once again, as Desmond once said in Lost, yes, this is going to become a bit, because I think they've been very funny the last time. We'll see you on the other side, brother.
Yo, hey, what's happening, dude? I'm a guy with a rep for being rude, terrorizing people wherever I go. It's not intentional, just keeping the flow. Fixing test scores to get the best scores, dropping banana peels all over the floor. I'm the kid that made the delinquency an art. Last name Simpson, first name Bart. I'm here today to introduce the next phase, the next step in the big Bart craze. I got a dance real easy to do. I learned it with no rhythm and so can you. So move your body if you got the notion. Front to back in a rock-like motion. Now that you got it if you think you can. Do it through the news, that's the Bart man. It wasn't long ago, just a couple of weeks. I got in trouble, yeah, pretty deep. Homer was yelling, Mom was too.
Place to be Nation, welcome back. We hope you enjoyed the first part on what was meant to be serious stuff, which was quite serious, but then descended into chaos, and Rory's random silliness, which was meant to be random and silly, and again descended into chaos. You don't really come here for well thought out and planned chat. You just come here to hear us talk, obviously. We hope, anyway. I could be talking to no one right now apart from the four of us. But if you are listening, thank you for that, and we'll just tell you what else you can listen to on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. On the most recent Place to Be podcast, number 548, JT Scott and guest Kevin Pittack are back in the home office for a dive into the 19th of October 1990 Madison Square Garden house show. In the second episode of The Great Debate Wrestling, Andy is joined by Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan and Chad Campbell. Scott and Dr. G are back with the newest episode of the wonderful NWA Saturday special, where they go back to April of last year in Concord, North Carolina for the rebirth of the Crockett Cup. And episode number 42 of Row 1 Seat 1 has been joined by Robert O'Neill to discuss his life of going to live wrestling shows. Check out the Place to Be Nation Pop feed with some great shows that include the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour, Spectacular, I will never get tired of saying that, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, The Year in Pop, Laugh in Theatre, The Great Debate, Marvel Age and so much more, so please subscribe today. And while you're at it, subscribe to a pair of tremendous other podcast feeds. First, we have Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position feed, as it is home of Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Telling Stories, The Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast, The Journey Through Infinity, and more. And also check out the brand new North-South Connection, brought to you by JT Rosero, Chad Campbell, and Aaron George. It is the new home for Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Lynn's Wrestling, and the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, and much more. That is extremely difficult to say. Also, please listen to the latest Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, because the guest that Jacob had on that one was fantastic. It was me. And we have officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project determining the greatest WCW match ever. You'll have until New Year's Eve to do research, promote matches, and build your list. Conversation and rules can be found on www.facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. On our social media pages, the Fat Shit Tour, I mean the greatest junk food of all time tournament, has begun. Please remember to vote every single day. And be sure also not to forget to check out placebynation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the worlds of wrestling, sports and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown and Fox Report, This Week in WWE by John Crowe, Polly's Perspective and Ben's Unpopular Opinion. And don't forget to check out veteran columns such as Glenn Butler's Weekly Walk Around the Web. And finally, if you're doing online shopping at Amazon.com, which is where you should be doing your shopping these days, please be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right hand side of Place By Nation homepage, or use placebynation.com/Amazon. Doing that takes you right to Amazon and helps out Place By Nation with no cost to you. So, gentlemen, we are now into the second half of our wonderfully professional podcast. And it is now time for us to discuss our favourite things. The choice was on myself this week, or this month, should I say. And being the video geek, the video game geek that I am, I obviously wanted to choose our favourite wrestling video games. So there's many to choose from, not just from the WWE. There's many, many others you could have chosen from. However, we did all pick WWE games, so you know. But we still do have a varied selection here. So we'll go in chronological order, as we normally do. So we'll start off with Rory McNamara. Mr. McNamara, what is your favourite video game?
So the video game I chose for this category, favourites might be stretching it, but it's always going to hold a particularly soft spot in my heart and elsewhere. I received it for Christmas in 1996, the year I became a fan, for the, no guys, just don't hold this against me, for the Sega Saturn. Okay, just, you didn't hear that from me, all right? The Sega Saturn, said out loud now, WrestleMania, the arcade game. Oh, yes. Not WrestleMania 17, the arcade game. Not WrestleMania 19, the arcade game, but WrestleMania, the arcade game. Just in case anybody was in a doubt. Yes.
That's coming up later. That's coming up later.
Just checking. It's 8 characters on WrestleMania, the arcade game. All motion captured. Oh, yes. Make no mistake. Motion captured. This was the mid-90s after all. All the characters in it were somewhat out of date by the time the game emerged. I think even in the arcade, let alone the console ports. Shawn Michaels, for example, coming out to the Sherry music, although that would please one of our number here. Diesel, the world champion at the time, not in the game at all, that sort of thing. But you have got Bret Hart holding the Intercontinental title during his little character piece, so that'll tell you how long ago it was. Yes, the simplest game in the world, complete button masher. You could tell it was done by Acclaim. It's Mortal Kombat with wrestling characters. Undertaker firing ghosts at you, that sort of thing. Bam Bam doing a big splash and coming back up through the ring whilst on fire. Vince McMahon on commentary, so adds a star to it. Vince McMahon saying, somebody call security, adds 2 more stars to it. Vince McMahon saying, boom shakalaka, adds an infinite amount of stars to it. In case it was
wow, giving good memories right now. Wow.
There we go.
Point with his hammer.
There you go. This game, to pick another bit of Vince commentary from that game and paraphrase, this game is not a total debacle. There you are. It's Vince at his most mid-90s bombast. Lawler trying to hold on as well. The commentary, just in fact, if you put the Sega Saturn disc into your CD player, track one is just surface white noise. Track two is the entire commentary sheet from start to finish. 13 minutes of Vince and Lawler just reading out their lines. So you have not lived until you heard Vince say, Undertaker, 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 Undertaker. Believe me, just get it in. CD player track two. If I could play it underneath it, I would, because I've lost my copy, because, you know, even I wasn't stupid enough not to sell my Sega Saturn many, many years ago. But yeah, it's great fun. Very simple. Two game modes, Intercontinental Championship and World Championship. Your standard beat everybody to win them, you know. Intercontinental, it's a few one-on-ones and a one-on-two, and one one-on-three match, if I remember correctly. World Championship mode is all handicap matches until the very last match, where you have to try to beat everybody. And if you eventually are lucky enough to win, you get a very simple ending sequence. It's just your guy raising their hand as the camera pans awkwardly around the crowd. But then you get some text saying what actually happened to your character. So, for example, if you do win the world title with Bam Bam, you learn that he celebrated by torching the place and burning to a crisp everybody in the audience, which is a bit of a stretch. Or if you win it with Razor Ramon, you become a low-down bum drunk. So maybe the game is kind of attached to reality. Yeah, dear old WrestleMania, the arcade game, the ultimate plug and play. What it lacks in brain cells, it makes up for in enjoyment levels. So you could probably find it still out there if you want to go into the murky world of emulation. But do give it a shout, or just fire up YouTube and listen to the commentary.
Great pick.
He knocked the stuffing out of
him. Please tell me. I've never played it through proper or nefarious means. But please tell me it goes, what a maneuver. Please
I'm
tell me that's
pretty sure that's in there. Sadly, because there's no real pinfall in the game. It's just a formality to end the match when you drain all that energy. You don't get any one, two, and he got him. No, he didn't. Everything else is fine.
The pinfalls are irrelevant in that game.
This is for all the marbles.
Well, just having a quick look at the local wonderful CEX online. Oh, yes. If you wanted to buy a boxed WrestleMania the arcade game for the PlayStation 1, it will set you back 28 great British pounds.
In these times, Rory, you know you've got to do it.
It's happening.
If you want to buy it unboxed, so I'm assuming this is, oh no, this will be a cartridge. For the Sega 32X, it's £25. You also have to pay for a 32X, because who has a 32X these days?
Who had a 32X those days?
Your one, Rory, a boxed WrestleMania arcade game for the Saturn is 30 bones.
Wow. Worth every penny even now.
I get the feeling in the honourable mentions, I won't talk about it now, but I get the feeling we're going to be talking some arcade games later. Like the rest of us have picked proper home games, but arcade games will be coming.
But what other arcade game could you see where the poster is Bret Hart? What other game? Would you see Bret Hart trying to give a side Russian leg sweep to an arcade cabinet?
Very uncooperative. Only, you know, a 4 out of 10 work at that particular arcade machine.
Oh, I know.
And a tagline of "It's got brawls" as well.
He was blown up in the first 30 seconds.
Bret would probably give it a 5 out of 10 just despite Triple H. Oh, wonderful choice. I've never played it, but it may be on a list, or a memory stick somewhere.
It's an amazing game. Like just him describing it, the memory is so like entrenched in my head of playing it for hours. So that was a great pick.
Thank you.
So we will move on to another great pick that you think is a great pick, Sean, as you are next up. And our chronological walk through the world of wrestling video games. So fire away, sir.
All right, so I'm an old man, so I played probably every wrestling game there is, but if I get down to the brass tacks of what is probably my all-time favorite game, and I think a lot of it has to do with the gameplay, it has to do with the engine it uses, it would probably be No Mercy 2000 for Nintendo 64. And that's a really, I mean, if you talk to most people, that tends to be like the epitome of games, and I wish they would bring it back in some kind of form. I still have a Nintendo 64, and I still have my No Mercy game, so I still play it. But there were nights where, you know, I'd get home from work, and my friends would come over. There'd be, like, six of us, like, in wrestling matches. And we would literally, we would start at, like, 6 at night, and we'd go till 2, 3 in the morning. And we would just, it's just such a great game. Create a wrestler mode, career mode. I actually... The only thing that really came out of good out of WCW 2000 was Scott Steiner. So I actually created Scott Steiner in the game. And if I do say so myself, I used to whoop everybody's ass with Scott Steiner because my finisher was the Steiner driver. It wasn't called Steiner driver in the pick a move on option, but it was a Steiner driver, and that was my finisher. So, but yeah, all my friends would create different characters and things like that. We kind of did our own kind of little, you know, wrestling every night, and we had belts, we had tournaments. It was amazing. And to this day, I like to play it. I try to get my kids into it, but unfortunately with Xbox and all these other great new systems that come out, I can't get them to get it on my N64, No Mercy game. So, but yeah, I absolutely love that game. I mean, I would play that hour, like for 8, 9, 10 hours at a time, we would sit and play it. So, my pathetic life before my wife is playing No Mercy all the time. So, yeah. And bourbon. So think about this. A nice Friday night of bourbon and No Mercy playing with your friends while you're smoking a pack of cigarettes that hour.
That's the dream, sir. That's the dream.
I was going to say, was back some, people, then. Some people would call that a waste of time. No!
not me. No. It was just an amazing game. I don't know if you guys have ever played it, but...
Oh.
Tremendous game.
Yeah.
Dig diggity dog.
Socko. So I used to create my own wrestler. So I had Scott Steiner. So then I wanted to be really cool, and I was into Shawn Michaels, so I created Sensational Shawn Storm. So I wanted my name in it. and so his abbreviation was Triple S, you know, for Triple H. This is my genius. And Shawn Storm was the shit. So I don't know, man. It's such a great game. You could just get entrenched in wrestling doing that.
Oh, No Mercy. Probably is the gold standard. I mean, my brother has still got my, might as well be mine to play No Mercy N64. Next time I see him, if I ever to see him again.
And even before that, WrestleMania game before that was great. I think the great thing about that is the engine it was used with.
The engine started with WCW NWO World Tour.
Yes, WrestleMania 2000, Revenge, and No Mercy. Yeah.
It's so easy to pick up and play. Easy to play, difficult to master, I think is the way to describe
it. And that's what I liked it. Like, you had to time your, like, blocks, like, on point. I mean, it was like the timing of it was like you were actually in the game. I just can't even begin to explain how great it was.
Tap A for weak grapple with moves combined. Hold A for strong grapple with moves combined. Storyline mode. Multiple game modes. The ladder match was really well rendered. Oh, just amazing game, No Mercy. Amazing game.
It's a game that it's so good that I bought a USB modified N64 controller from my laptop so I could play it properly, because I couldn't work out how the best way to map my control to my PlayStation 1. So I thought, bugger this, it's too hard. I got the proper one, and it's life-changing event.
It's funny you said that, because I used to take it. So like I told you, I travel for work. I used to take it with me so I could plug it into my TV at the hotel. That's how obsessed I was with this game. So good.
I would do exactly the same thing. I used to take my PlayStation on holiday with me. I used to go and stay at my grandparents on a Saturday night if my mom and dad were out, and I would pack up my PlayStation. I would pack every game that I had for it. So I know exactly what you, and that was only an overnight. So I would do. I would be in the same boat as you if I worked away from home.
How great would it be if we could get that gameplay today and, like, all of us could just play No Mercy again? That would be tremendous if we could.
Oh, yes, please.
Well,
if rumors are to be believed, and it's not just the AEW people saying stuff because they want people to like them,
yes,
and the people that they talk about, or the people who they're talking to, won't believe everything they say anyway, that's what they're wanting for the new or the next AEW game, is to be used on as close to No Mercy as possible.
I would be all in on that. I'd be all over that game with that engine. I would be all over it.
I see what you did there. You're all in on it. Hold on.
Yep, I'm all in. I didn't do that on purpose, but that was really good. Wow.
It was.
Yeah.
I would even buy that if Cody Rhodes was on the front cover. Sorry, when Cody Rhodes is on the front cover of that game, I will still buy it, even then.
This game is three stars.
give me a playable Arn Anderson in that game. Holy shit.
Arn Anderson, I come to think of it, I think the only game that I know that Arn Anderson is in is that Legends of WrestleMania one that came out.
Yeah.
You can't spontaneously spine bust anybody on that one. That's a missed opportunity.
But if they did like that AEW game like that, you could have Tully and Arn in it now. You could have Jake the Snake in it. You could have some good stuff in there too,
yeah,
for old timers too. So,
well, let's hope and pray that it comes to it.
Yep.
And just for you know, keep it all relevant. If you want to buy a boxed version of WWF No Mercy from CEX over in the UK, £25 will cost you.
Are they giving you royalties for all this?
£12 if it's £12 if it's unboxed. I love CEX. There's a CEX in my hometown. Rory's talking about Saturn. It's had a Saturn in it for about 2 months before lockdown. It was sitting there.
Once we're back open, you know what to do.
Well, it's sitting there at £60. But the games, obviously somebody's traded it in. And the games they had with it were, there was a football game, but there was Sega Rally was one of them. I'm like, whoa.
Sega Rally was a good game. Very long, yeah. Easy left, baby.
It's like, so I'd Sega Rally. Now, if I could sneak that into either my bedroom or the good lady's front room, then, you know, I'd be tempted.
It's DVD player, darling, yes.
Oh, yeah. I remember doing that. That was the old PlayStation 2, which we'll come on to in a second. Half segue. I'm getting good at this. That's where I tried to convince my dad and my mum to buy me a PlayStation 2 for my Christmas. Going, it's a DVD player too. It's amazing. And, they just bought a DVD player.
Oh dear.
Anyway, so with that wonderful segue there, we'll move on to the PlayStation 2 era. And Ben, you're up next.
It away, so. Full disclosure, gentlemen. So, I'm not exactly a massive gamer, so my bit's going to be quite short on this. But I did play No Mercy, and I loved it. So that was an excellent picture. My pick is for the aforementioned PlayStation 2, and it is SmackDown Shut Your Mouth from 2002. The reason I picked this one is because it was the game that included the Raw versus SmackDown mode for the first time in season mode. And I think it's the best season mode they have ever done in a game. It was the full walk around the arena backstage bit, the creator wrestler. You could only start on Sunday Night Heat. So obviously that'd be like starting NXT nowadays. And then you get promoted to the main roster. There's a couple of things I don't like. The Royal Rumble match is terrible on it. But the ladder match and the Hell in a Cell are tremendous, so it all kind of balances out. But like I think has been mentioned, probably is second only to the No Mercy game in terms of the game engine, and just a really, really good game. There you go.
And one I must say I've never played, so it's off to CEX for me then.
Really?
I've never played that one though. I've played some of those pre-SmackDown versus Raw games, but never that one.
Well, I think this was the second game of the SmackDown series. I might be wrong on that. I know. Sorry to Callum. I know Callum's got his pick coming up, so I think there was another two or three after that before it went to SmackDown versus Raw. But yeah, it's really, really good. I'm not ashamed to say it, but my guy in the game was Chris Benoit. Won many a title with Benoit. Not even gonna lie, it was kind of that great mix of the technical style with the brawling because he was so good at everything. He was just the perfect all-rounder for that game.
Speaking of, if you are going to go to CEX, Rory, it's £2.50.
Oh, there you go.
Seriously, we need to be sponsored by CEX. That needs to happen.
I absolutely should be. It's a wonderful, it is an absolutely wonderful game. When I did get the PlayStation 2, that was the game that I got a FIFA game and I got a SmackDown. I got SmackDown. Shut your mouth.
I think what I liked about it, like I say, was the fact that the creator, you know, compared to what we've got in the 2K games, the creator wrestler worked so well into the season mode. They actually integrated it, whereas you can't really do that on the 2K games, I don't think. Or at least the ones I've played.
No, I completely forgot until you mentioned it that if you did create your own guy, you would start on Heat. It did give it a lot more realism. But it was just they did the wee things in it really well. So you're talking about using Benoit. So some of the finishers that you would see come from counters were actually included in the game. So if you ran. Tried to clothesline Benoit, he would counter you, and you could put him straight into the crossface, or you could counter a clothesline into the rock bottom, or you could counter a kick into the ankle lock. It was wee things like that you would see on television every week that made it superb.
It was the little things as well, like the backstage bit. It was always like Final Fantasy VII, or like a role playing game in terms of obviously you could just talk to the different people, and that would predetermine. You know, if you're gonna, you know, have a heel turn or face turn. When in the game was the capacity to have a heel turn or face turn, they never let you do anything like that. And this is the first game.
Hello.
Hello. Is everybody gone?
Still there.
I'm here. I was just saying because you know. And the gameplay and the actual gameplay was superb as well. Like I say, the Rumble match was a bit shoddy. That's fine, but everything else was so good about it. Even the little things like the entry. It was the first time I think they used the really proper Titantron, the entrance videos. Just the little things, and then you know, like I say, I was always Benoit because he was kind of like in that Randy Orton mode of that was a finisher you could put on anybody. They did the thing with you could put a finisher, you know, on a big fat guy. If you were a little guy, that could not happen.
Mm-hmm. I liked it that they snuck in some people. So you always get the thing where as soon as the game comes out, it's immediately out of date with the roster that's on it. But they snuck in some guys that debuted a bit later. But they stuck them in as your create a wrestler template. So if you wanted, you could. They already had a preset template for Jamie Noble and John Cena were two of them. Paul Heyman was another one. It's small things like that that they did really well that they don't.
Yeah, well, it was obviously 2002. It was like that era, like you say, where all these new guys were getting introduced. Some of them were in the game somewhere, but. You know, they were there as a creator wrestler, like you say.
That was a wonderful game.
It was.
I feel like we've monopolised it and we've monopolised this game.
I know. So we might as well go on to your choice, seeing it, because I think it kind of follows it on.
Yeah, well, we could talk about mine, then we can move on to the chat about the two of them, because they do follow each other on quite nicely.
Yeah.
My choice was the next year's entry, SmackDown Here Comes the Pain. So this is one of the this is one of the last ones that they brought out that was really like an arcade style before they moved on. Next year, this was the last one that before it became SmackDown versus Raw, and it became a bit more simulation-y. Not necessarily, nothing wrong with that, because the SmackDown versus Raw matches, SmackDown versus Raw games were good in and of themselves, but this one, I think they peaked with the with this one, because it looked spectacular. The roster in it was excellent. It was the first time you had Goldberg in it. You had guys like Brock at his peak killer. The Rock and Steve Austin, that was the last appearances as sort of when they were on the active roster. The season mode in it was fantastic. The only thing that was missing is you couldn't walk around backstage as freely as you could and shut your mouth. There was no commentary on it. So they did take away some good things that were in Shut Your Mouth, but as a two game stretch goes, these are two excellent games.
Yeah, that one I have played. Not very often, I'm sad to say, but I have played it before. I remember the gameplay being so smooth for that one. What was the career mode like on it? I never really tried that, but just exhibition matches, I had hours of fun with those.
The career mode was along the same lines as Shut Your Mouth, but you didn't have the walking around backstage. You basically had it listed all of the the places you could go, and then it told you, right, if you go here, there's nothing to do. If you go here, you can talk to Stephanie. You go here, you can talk to the Hurricane, and you could choose that.
So you could talk to Stephanie if you wanted, or talk to the Hurricane. That's who would I pick out of those two? Now there's a dilemma.
I don't know why I chose those two, but those are the two that always, for some reason, popped up.
It puts a date on the game as well, which I quite like.
Stand back, there's an annoying bitch coming through.
I mean, they were just really good games. Like you say, it was like the last iteration before it went a bit more simulation-based. And I kind of like the whole mix of the arcade with the decision-making. And you just didn't get that afterwards.
Sorry, guys. I peeked behind the curtain. I just said that, and obviously it was a reference to the Hurricane and Stephanie McMahon. But the good lady walked into the room, and now I'm getting absolutely... now I'm getting growlers. I'm shouting
Tim
at
that. Tim Cable's now my favourite podcaster.
I know. The artist formerly known as the good lady's favourite podcaster. So if you're wanting to pick up and play this game again, it will set you back five great British pounds in CEX.
That extra year or 2 years worth on it.
It was a great game.
Oh, it was.
I think this was one of the games that I broke. I wore the disc down. The first two in the PlayStation, Shut Your Mouth, I wore the disc down as well. Mm-hmm. And one of the honourable mentions, or two of the honourable mentions, actually.
I think the SmackDown game for me was like the last wrestling games I properly loved. Like, I brought the SmackDown versus Raw ones, and they were okay, but these ones, maybe that's just the fogginess of retro time playing on me, but...
I've never got the engine right. For all the 2K games, whatever you want to call them, but we won't talk about 2K20 at all. But I just can't be doing with the engine of those games. It's too much. Just
no.
All the mini games to kick out of pins. No. Just button bash to kick out of pins. That's how you do it. You move the analog stick to taunt. That's what you do.
Even in the first, the mini games are a bit. Now that we've talked about them. The first four, where you didn't have the minigame, and it was just complete chance whether or not you kicked out or not. You had no say on it whatsoever. That brought peril to you when you were playing. I remember one of my pals said that if you pressed a button combination, you'd never kick out. He would never tell me, and I wanted to throttle him. But obviously, this that it's like the was it it's one of these folklore things that you never actually existed, but it was the not knowing whether you'd done enough to pin the guy was just had a wee bit of excitement, especially as a what age would I been, 9 or 10 years old when those games came out.
I'm just trying to think the last SmackDown versus Raw 2007. I seem to remember being quite a good one. That was the one where, yeah, that's right. Well, should I mention this? No, I'm going to mention it anyway. Where it actually had a storyline, which is actually called The Wolverine Meets the Dead Man.
Oh, yes. And is this not the one where The Undertaker goes, your family will be disappointed at you, and it was very eerie.
It kind of been long before, because, you know, the lead times for these games and everything, you know.
So it was 2000, and aye, so it would have come out at Christmas 2006.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Let's have a look, because it's quite eerie thinking about it. It's eerie quote. Oh, okay, IGN has not let me do it. It's obviously been for obvious reasons. So there you go. So the one of the quotes in it, the Undertaker says, is, "If you insist on making this mistake, your grieving family will have no one to blame but you when the inevitable occurs."
Oh, bloody hell.
Good God. And you had the year before, you had, was it Eddie? When that was the year that they brought in the Buried Alive match, and your main story was Eddie being buried alive by The Undertaker at Survivor Series. Eddie had, if it was 2006, Eddie would have passed away before the game even came out, or a couple of weeks after the game came out.
Yeah, probably not long.
Okay, so another peek behind the curtain. We temporarily lost Sean's audio, so we weren't, you know, pushing him out of the circle. He was talking to us and we couldn't hear him. So, Sean, do you have any comments on Shut Your Mouth and or Here Comes the Pain?
No. What I was going to say, though, is when you were talking about the 2K games, I've tried those as well, and I think they suck. And that's why I always go back. Again, I'm an old guy, so I go back to what I know traditionally, obviously. So, but I never played those other ones you guys were talking about. I'm totally a Nintendo goof with the games, so yeah, that's it.
But I stole/borrowed and never gave back my cousin's NES, but that was the only, and my mum had a Game Boy. That was the only Nintendo consoles I ever owned up to the Wii. So I was only ever a PlayStation guy. So I never got to play like No Mercy or WrestleMania 2000 as they came out. I was never fortunate enough to have an N64. But going back, thankfully, modern technology can allow us to go back and play all these games. So you don't have to put yourself through the year on 2K nonsense that they put out just to skin you another £50 or $50. Insert appropriate currency here.
And can I just add, you've never known happiness, gentlemen, until you can imagine 10 to 15 lads on a stag do finding a really good pub, but B, also like a bunch of early 90s retro arcade games, including WrestleFest and the Royal Rumble in there. It was like, we might as well have been like, you know, in a lap dancing bar or something. It was like, yeah, we're going to be here for the next 3 hours. Let's just clear the deck.
WrestleFest would have been my next. I love WrestleFest.
Oh,
I mean the voices, and you know, you want the regular voices, but you get these little cheesy voices like DiBiase and Mean Gene. I mean, the voice of the change are ridiculous. I'm coming for you, pal. And this
is like, yeah, Ted DiBiase sounds as if he was voiced by 2020 Seth Rollins.
Yeah, he sounded like he had a rubber band tied around his balls when he talked.
Really, although to sleep with my million-dollar dream.
Yes, but, perfect. Yes.
The Andre was pretty accurate. Little blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
no,
it's Andre. That's awesome.
Well, that's a good point for us to mention our honourable mentions. So, have you got any other show that come to mind other than WrestleFest?
No, that was my go-to favourite.
fair enough.
I had both Warzone and Attitude for the N64, yeah. But having to press pause to look up the move list every time did get wearying after a while. Shane McMahon's commentary on Attitude.
I like Warzone. Warzone was good.
The gameplay on those I didn't like. Yeah, I just didn't like it. And the graphics were weird, and the way the bodies were, it was just odd.
Yeah, the flipper hands and all that, yeah, not great.
Yeah.
Attitude did lead us to have two ECW games as well, which are equally as frustrating to play.
Hardcore Revolution and Anarchy Rules.
Absolutely. Although I remember every time I hear, what's the song? By the Way, by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. It's amazing what things trigger some memories. By the Way by the Red Hot Chili Peppers always reminds me of the summer of 2001 or 2002, whenever it came out. 2002. Because I found both of these ECW games in Woolworths. There's one for the two of you to remember.
Did you get some pick and mix at the same time?
I probably did. But they were down to like a fiver each or something, so I asked my mum to pick them up for me, and I played Anarchy Rules all the time. And if you remember, the loading screen on Anarchy Rules had like broken bones on it, if you ever played it. And for whatever reason, this might sound quite sadistic when I say it, but the By the Way always reminds me of a broken spine from Anarchy Rules. I'm just taking back to that loading screen. But honourable mentions for me, a left field one was Legends of Wrestling 2. I loved that game. I don't know if any of you ever played it.
I've only played. I know I've like seen people play. I've only played Legends of Wrestling the original. So I've never played that one, I must say.
Legends of Wrestling, the original one was good as well, but Legends of Wrestling 2 was a belter. £3 if you want it for the PlayStation. A fiver if you want it for the GameCube. Although, to be fair, again, a tangent as we do, I've started buying an absolute shedload of GameCube games because they can play them on the Wii, and I found my Wii just after Christmas. Oh, hey. I've got GoldenEye and everything.
I forgot about Day of Reckoning on the GameCube. I actually like that game too.
That is a tremendous game as well.
Yes, that is a great game.
Another honorable mention from me was WWE 13 with the Attitude Era mode. That was a fun game to play.
That the one with Punk on
cover. It certainly is. The one that they were teasing.
Yes, that was a good one, yes.
The one that they were teasing CM Punk, Steve Austin match for the whole time they were advertising it.
With the JR, they did that little debate with JR in the middle of it. Yeah.
Yeah, they did the sit down.
Got my hopes all up. I was ready for that.
Oh, absolutely. So Day of Reckoning, £5. Day of Reckoning 2 is £15. I didn't pay £15 for my copy. I think I might have paid 8 or 10.
Why the £10 increase? When did that come out then?
I have no idea. Supply and demand.
Wow.
WWE 13, £1.50 on the Xbox, £2.50 on the PlayStation, or £3.50 on the Wii. Don't know why the Wii version is £3.50.
And Day of Reckoning 2 has Stacey Keibler on the front of the cover.
Ah, yes. I know the one.
Certainly does.
And the first one has Trish Stratus, Orton, and Triple H.
Could you sound any more creepy then, Rory, saying that?
No, I couldn't. No.
Yes, you can. Yes, he can. Harking back to episode 6 when he's talking about WrestleMania 22.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, Stacey Keebler's back with her head turned looking at you seductively.
Yes. That's the one.
Yes, that's the one.
That's obviously what George Clooney saw in the shops and thought, one day, after you've been on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, I'll get her when she's young, and then I'll dump her so she can go get pregnant by another guy. That's what he did. George Clooney's a smart guy, man. Very clever.
I'll attend to agree.
He's done all right, Andy Clooney. He's done all right for himself.
And as I'm watching the Perfect Storm finishing up here, objectively speaking, fine looking man. See if I look like George Clooney when I'm his age, I'll be doing all right.
There you go.
And on that note, does anyone else have any other honourable mentions, or shall we move on to the pressing matter at hand?
Let's not talk about it.
You've mentioned mine, so do it.
We'll talk about Crush Hour another day.
Oh, Crush Hour, that came out of the game. I need to finish my collection. I remember getting Crush Hour and it was so disappointing.
Dreadful.
The only thing I liked about Crush Hour was it had Slow Chemical as Kane's music. And I do like that music.
Nothing else.
Crush Hour for the PlayStation 2, £2. Crush Hour for the GameCube, £8.
Wow.
Where'd
you go after that?
Consumer advice has been amazing.
Thank you, CEX website. Exactly.
I hope to see you again someday.
other second-hand gaming shops might be available.
Not for me, there isn't. I'm a CEX man through and through.
He bleeds the red.
Yes, you cut me open, I bleed red. Absolutely. All right, before I go down any tangent and start looking up more obscure things on CEX that you can get for less than a tenner, we will move on to Sean's Happy Place. And as we know, Sean's Happy Place, April 1st, 2001, the Reliant Astrodome in Houston, Texas.
He'll tell us.
We're going to talk about that later.
Sorry. Too soon. For anyone who's listened before, we've co-opted something that's part of sort of British radio folklore. Not really folklore. It's an institution.
Thank you.
That's the word I was looking for there, Ben. Thank you. My verbiage has deserted me. So we've co-opted a British radio institution for our own gains here at the Special Relations. We call it the Happy Place, and tonight Sean is going to take us to his happy place. But to tell you more about it is our resident booker, our Dusty Rhodes baby, Ben Locke. Take it away, good sir.
Thank you so much, Callum. Sean, when we first started this, we did use the phrase, if you were stuck in your house for 2 days, what would you like to watch? But that seems largely inappropriate now, but that's kind of the vibe we would go to back in them heady days of like January, February.
Yeah, that's some SmackDown versus Raw foreshadowing there, isn't it?
Yeah, that is. we were ahead of the game. Little did we know talk about that, what our world would look like.
Right. So for people who might be listening for the first time, you are allowed 3 albums of your choice, 1 TV box set of your choice, 3 films, 1 book, 1 wrestling pay-per-view, and 5 matches. The only rule we have is that none of the 5 matches can be from your pay-per-view, so you can mix and match that way. So, Mr. Sean, if you would like to kick us off, please, with your album choices.
All right. So, my 3 albums. So, I'm a big Fleetwood Mac fan, and I just always enjoyed their music. It's just good, solid rock. You know, it's just like comfort food music for me. And when they reunited, I think it was in 97, They did a VH1 special called The Dance. And they did a live, like, they all reunited. They did a live concert in front of a really small, like, intimate audience. And I just thought they sounded so good. They sounded so crisp. And I think the album itself is still one that I listen to often. I think them live at that point in their life and freshly reunited just sounded fantastic. So I don't know if any of you have heard that, The Dance, but truly an amazing special to watch that was on VH1 and a great, great album.
The Fleetwood Mac, the first two-time pick on the... We only had three of these, and they've been already picked twice. So there you go. Yeah, I have heard it. It's absolutely fantastic. They are probably the only band left on my bucket list who I've not seen.
Same for me. Yep. The next one, I'll do the next one, Pink Floyd, obviously Dark Side of the Moon. You know, just... I don't know what to say about this album. I mean, every song is just haunting, some great music. And I said this on another podcast. If you've never sat down drunk to watch The Wizard of Oz, The Dark Side of the Moon.
Don't be that guy.
No, I'm not that guy. I was that guy. And so I actually did it. And it's like a sobering experience, especially when you're drinking. So. But that's not why I like it. I liked it before, but just a great overall album. And it's like an experience. It's like when you listen to the album, it's a total experience. And I just love that, that album.
Yeah. I love the way the songs blend together as well. It is a full album from start to end. It's just a wonderful record.
Yeah, The Wizard of Oz was written. I'm kidding. I'm joking. I think that's bullshit, but it is cool to watch. And then the last band not a lot of people know, and it's not really a band. It's a duo, and it's more of a... niche moment in time for me. It was in like probably 93. You know, I'm gonna date myself. You know, I was in my early, it was actually 20. And my friends were going to college, and they did the bar scene. And I saw this band, and they're a duo. They're called Loan and Navarro, and they had already put out two albums at that point. And they've done multiple albums since then. They actually wrote the song We Belong by Pat Benatar. So the 80s version of that song that you heard was written by them, but they do an amazing live version of that where they actually play it acoustically, and they do half of it in Spanish and half of it in English, which when I started taking my wife and I took her to see them live, it was kind of an ooh-la-la thing, right? It's kind of romantic. so that was, you know, so not only did I watch Harry Potter movies to get her, and falsely say I liked them, but I also made her go. So unfortunately, the one guy, Eric Lowen, died a couple years ago from Lou Gehrig's disease. So they're not around anymore. But if you ever have the time, or if you're on Apple Music, or you're on whatever, you know, look them up. They're a fantastic band with many, many great albums. So those would be my three.
This is what we're kind of, the other thing I was kind of hoping for when we did this is we'd get some recommendations. So. That's two bands that I think we all know, but one that we don't. I'm quite happy with that mix.
You want me, yeah. I must say. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, if you're on Facebook, his name's Dan Navarro. He does actually live concerts almost every night during the COVID crisis. So he does some of their old songs live on Facebook every night. So his name's Dan Navarro. He's actually related to what's the Navarro and the Red Hot Chili Peppers?
That Dave Navarro.
Dave Navarro is his cousin.
I was going to ask if that was the same guy, but it's obviously a relation thereof.
Yeah, he's a cousin. He also does voice work. He does voices on Family Guy. It's just a really cool history they have. So look them up. They're really good. So those are my three.
There you go. Oh,
fantastic.
It's what we like, Sean. It's what we like.
It is.
So your one TV show. You can pick a season. You can pick a show, Sean. Just make sure it's just a really good box set. Go for it.
Like, so when we first did this, I picked like five shows, and then Ben said, no, you're missing the concept of this. So picking one is hard because there's so many that I like. But if I had to pick one, like if I were stuck inside and I could just watch every season back to back to back, maybe the first three more than the other ones, is 24.
Yes.
Yeah, I love Jack Bauer. The first season was mind-numbing. Like, I remember... I saw the first disc set I bought was Alias. I don't know if any of you have watched the TV show Alias before. And I just watched it back to back to back, like in like a week. So I went out and bought 24, kind of hoping I would do the same thing. It had already been on for two seasons. And I bought the first two on disc. And one like snowy weekend, A three-day weekend, I think I watched the first two seasons, and I just could not stop watching. So, yeah, and then it gets a little repetitive after the first three or four seasons. You know, you can only turn traitor and, you know, your country over and over again so many times. But there's only so many moles. There's only so many moles and so many shocks that you can have. But the first three seasons of 24 are absolutely incredible.
I can't speak for the other two, but the first season, I think, was the first American show that came out. We'd had the comedy, so like Friends had hit. But the first season of 24 was that first sort of US drama, obviously 24 episodes. And, you know, you were sort of nervously waiting for the week for the what was to come. I think we were only a week behind you guys or a day behind you guys. And I also did the first, I also did the same as you one weekend. It was an Easter weekend. So it was from Easter Saturday to the Monday. Me and my friend managed to do all three seasons of 24 in 3 days. So about 18 hours a day. I was like, that was a real good use of time.
It's so entrenching. Like the first season, every single episode's a cliffhanger. You're on pins and needles and you give yourself a heart attack almost just waiting to see what's going to happen. I've never had to do that to you before quite like that.
It was that whole thing just waiting on tentacles to see what happened, especially, I won't spoil it for those who've seen it. I know it's a 20-year-old show now, but obviously, you find out the twist in the second to last episode, don't you? So just having to wait that week to find out what happens next. And well, in this Netflix era we live in now.
I feel like you could spoil it, but it's 20 years later, but I'm not going to like you did. But the last episode of season one is like, what the hell just happened?
I didn't spoil it. I just said the big twist happened.
Big twist, all right. Yeah, it's a big one.
It's not a show that I've ever seen. But I've only ever heard good things about it. And given that as of next Friday, when my last assignment's due, I may have a wee bit more time in my hands. It's gonna get put on the list of stuff I should watch through.
Absolutely.
I know it's on Amazon Prime. I don't know if it's on Netflix.
If I've got Amazon Prime, so if it's on Amazon, then I'll be able to get it. So I'll keep an eye out for it.
Season 1 to 5, I'd recommend. You could stop after that, but season one to five.
It's on Hulu, if you have Hulu.
I don't think we get that over here.
I think we checked
that the last time.
Yeah.
Which is disappointing because there's a lot of stuff that's getting put on Hulu now, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot.
But yeah, definitely going on. It was definitely now going on the firmly going on the list because I've never heard anything. I've not heard anything bad ever said about it, and it's the first time I've heard. It's the first time I've spoken about it, or somebody's spoken about it in a while, so I completely forgot about it. But it's now back on the list there.
Well, that phrase like destination TV, that's what it was for the first 5 years, easy.
It won't be disappointed.
Keith Sutherland's just amazing.
Well, I even like his new show, Designated Survivor, but they already
canceled
it. But I love that show, and now they canceled it. Yeah, Kiefer Sutherland's awesome.
Designated Survivor's on Netflix, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. I keep seeing that. I keep seeing stuff like that. So what you're saying is anything that Kiefer Sutherland's in, just you know, keep it there. It's probably going to be quite good.
Yeah, if you got a Kiefer Sutherland TV show so far, you would not be disappointed. It's good.
Fair enough.
Unlike a certain pay-per-view and a certain match.
later. Oh,
sorry about that.
So right, Mr. Kidd, you are allowed three films of your choice.
Oh man, this was hard too. I love the mafia movies. Goodfellas is probably the quintessential. I have Goodfellas and Godfather on here. The storytelling, the mythology, the reality of it. Goodfellas is a true story, so it just sucks you in. And great cast, Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci, Ray Liotta, just a great story about the mob that's true. And I just can't say enough about the movie. I don't want to spoil too much. Some great scenes, some great murders. You know, murders are always great in movies, right? So a lot of cursing, you know, stuff right up my alley. Godfather's more laid back, where it's almost like a more realistic piece around the time it's in. It's in the early 1900s. They go through the whole story of how the Godfather comes from Italy and Godfather 2, and just tremendous filmmaking on both of these. One's Francis Ford Coppola, the other one's Martin Scorsese, two of the greatest filmmakers of all time. So
yeah,
love those. And then a third one is also what I call a quintessential great filmmaker of all time. And there's so many to pick from here, and I had listed a whole bunch of them, but again, Ben shit on me and said I had to pick three.
it's all Ben's fault, kids. It is.
So, but if I pick the one that is just so out there, makes me laugh, has great humor, and has a different spin on something historic, it's Inglourious Basterds. I think the villain, I can't remember what his name is, the main guy.
Hitler.
No, not Hitler. The other guy that works for Hitler, the main Nazi guy. I can't remember his name, but the opening scene in Glorious Bastards, where he's hunting them down and he's sitting in the cabin drinking the milk, and he's just so methodical. If you've ever seen the movie, is one of the best opening scenes in films ever, with tremendous dialogue. And it's Quentin Tarantino. And in the ending of the movie is just so out there and so like, wow, if this had really happened, how great would have this been? Just a tremendous movie, and Brad Pitt in it. I love the way he says Nazi. Like, the way he talks in the movie is great. So those would be my three. Goodfellas, Godfather, and Inglourious Basterds would be my three.
I think they missed a trick on the film cover, though, not putting on Goodfellas some great murder Sean Kidd by Tom.
There's a good quote. In the write-up, we talk great murders. That would be good.
great murders of our time. I mean, Goodfellas is like probably my.
Have you guys seen all three of those?
I have.
Okay.
I've never seen Inglourious Basterds, but no, I could watch The Godfather all day, every day, and never get bored of it.
Yep.
Yeah, all 20 hours of it.
And that's just the first one. I could watch one and two all together, and then, you know, if the DVD player was to suddenly break as I put the third one in, then that would be the worst thing in the world.
Just use three to wipe your ass with. Move on. Yeah, three terrible.
It gave the wheel Sophia. What are you on about?
I don't buy for one minute that Sofia Coppola, there's like, who's the two cousins they fell in love or whatever, right?
Oh, Andy Garcia.
Would you buy for one minute Andy Garcia would fall for Sofia? I mean, come on, man. That's
the one thing that my mum always says. She says that Andy Garcia is a beautiful man. That's an actual quote. And she says that, and look at the state of her.
She is a very smart woman, and it's very accurate, that statement. Absolutely.
You've got a book you're allowed to read, Sean.
So I'm not a big book reader. I read a lot of comic books. I still do a lot of comic books, but I'm not a big reader. But there was two, and I had to figure out which one it is, but. My first pick was going to be Bridge to Terabithia. I don't know if you guys have ever heard that book, but it's a book that I read in school. The second one was To Kill a Mockingbird, and both of them had, you know, for some reason touched me. To Kill a Mockingbird is about, it's a period piece about a lawyer and kind of the racial relations at the time of a man that was accused of something and he defends him, and it's just about the racial tones of the time period, and I read it in school, and it always stuck with me. I love the movie. I think it was made in the 50s, stars Gregory Peck, and yeah, again, I'm showing my age a little bit, because people might start to go, who the hell is To Kill a Mockingbird, and who the hell is Gregory Peck? No one's.
That's a very good choice.
There's a movie similar to it, A Time to Kill, with Samuel Jackson.
Yes, I don't know if you've ever seen that.
It's very
I've
similar tones to that, except in a different period time frame.
Yeah. So, having done the pop culture part, it is now time for the wrestling part, and I feel I should almost step aside, because Rory and Sean are kindred spirits, because they have basically I'll let Sean explain, but it is basically like Rory's wheelhouse is your whole picks. So first of all, Sean, your pay-per-view choice.
So this one also, you know, Ben kind of shit on me for because I picked my favorite pay-per-view, but then I picked like I think one or two matches from this pay-per-view, and he said no, you can't pick that. He just blew it all up for me. But anyway. My favorite all-time pay-per-view, and again, my match selections are definitely going to age me quite a bit, which is fine because they're all good matches. Bash 89 for me is just one of the – when I got the WWE Network, it was the very first one I watched. I actually went to this pay-per-view in Baltimore when it came out, by the way. I live in D.C., and I actually went to this. And it just from top to bottom, a great show, from the top of the card all the way to the main event. Great Muda, Sting, Flair, Funk, you know, Luger, Steamboat, which is a much better match than some other match that I don't talk about. it's just, it's just a really great pay-per-view, top to bottom. Anytime it's on, I'll watch it. I'll enjoy it. And one of my all-time favorite matches is in that, in the main event. Of course, I couldn't pick that match because it's part of it. But Flair Funk main event, coming out of the feud of what happened from the previous Wrestle War and the last Steamboat trilogy with Flair and Funk attacking him and the build-up to that match, and it didn't disappoint. There was blood. There was, to quote one of our favorite, there was great neck work in the match. it's just amazing match, top to bottom, one of the greatest matches of all time.
And, so you said, sorry, John, I'm good.
No, go ahead.
You said you're there live. I mean, I know shows get very, you know, you always inflate your show when you have been there. Like, did you realize how great it was at the time, or was it just a case of you were there, it was really great, and then you watched it after the fact?
I was 16, and I'd only been watching wrestling for 3 years, so I started watching wrestling in 86. So to have a true appreciation of a really good wrestling match at the time was beyond me, but I had great memories of it, and I never watched it back on pay-per-view till I got the network. And when I watched it, I'm like, oh my God, I was there. And how did I not know how great this was when I was back then? I mean, I went to this show, I went to Capital Combat 90, I went to Bash 88. So all those shows that I went to that I rewatched are some of my top three favorite pay-per-views. Some of it's for nostalgia. Some of it's because the matches are just, they just nail it so good. You know, NWA in the 80s was just incredible.
You could tell me better than that, but is it Capital Combat 90, the RoboCop show?
It is, but take the RoboCop show out of it.
Oh, no. Yeah.
That makes it a really bad pay-per-view, but there's some really good gems in that show, too. But that's different here, but. Yeah, Bash 89, without a doubt.
That's a wonderful show, Bash 89.
It was my first network WCW show on the network, too.
That's the wild brawl at the end when JR's trying to wrap up and Flair and Funk and Sting and Muta still going at it. You know, I think there's a corner of the earth of those four are still going at it now in that. Oh, it's just.
And bloody Flair at the end yelling into the camera.
Yes.
Oh, so great.
Amazing. So great. Just amazing pay per view. Sort of Sid getting over for the first time. I just got everything. It's.
Yeah.
Even Cornette Paulie is fun. It's. Oh,
and Steamboat stunning. Flair. Better than any had any right to be, right? I mean, just unbelievable.
I love it. Love Bash 80. Like all decent people, Bash 89 is irregular.
Yeah, regular. I don't hear a lot of people bashing 89 Bash. You don't hear it very often.
Only people with bad opinions, and we don't do bad opinions in this neck of the woods.
Yeah, there's
some popular ones.
Yeah, there's never a shit take out of my mouth ever, right?
Well, looking at the card just now, I mean, you've got some. Now, me having put my hands up here, having never seen Bash 89.
What?
It might be on the list for this weekend. I've never seen it.
Well, now you've said that, young man, that might be the pay per view watch next month if I win.
If you're going to do the greatest WCW match of all time, you have to watch that show for the main event.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. You look at these matches and you could have, looking at the people in them, there's a few, having never seen it, there is a few contenders that you think could be on it. Skyscrapers against Dynamic Dudes just to see Sid Vicious and Dan Spivey knock this seven shades of shit out of Shane Douglas. Obviously the main event, there's a War Games. I do like a War Games. Luger Steamboat sounds like as if it could be good. Sting Muta sounds as if it could be good.
The Steiner match is good. So early Scott Steiner teaming with his brother against Sullivan and Rotundo is a really fun match. Really fun match. So you need to watch that too.
And then there's two ring King of the Hill Battle Royal, which I do know about. That sounds as if it could be the precursor to the Battle Bowl. So I mean, that's the five star match straight away.
Yeah, it's all top to bottom.
I will I'll definitely give. I'll dust off the VHS for that one. Oh, sorry, that's somebody else's. That's somebody else's thing. Sorry, bro.
I got to break out my walker every time I watch that pay per view.
I'll wait to see if.
Wait till the results of next week, and then we'll decide.
And we'll if not, then I'll certainly give it a go. I'll give it a go one way or another.
Yeah. Ben's making me break out the walker for quite a few shows this week. So anyway,
all in good time, Sean. All in good time.
Yes.
Right. So as well as your pay per view, Sean, you are allowed five matches, and this again will carry on the theme for Rory and Sean's loving. So carry on, gentlemen.
Yeah. So carrying on the walker talk, because you have to break out the walker for all these. So I couldn't pick Funk versus Flair at the Bash. So I picked my next favorite match they had was the final I Quit match at the Clash that year.
I have seen that one. That's
final chapter match of that feud. Just like, it's like, what do you even say about it? They beat the shit out of each other. They just constantly asking if you quit. And they're just so stiff. And the end of it, when they shake hands and, you know, I respect you, Ric Flair. If you go from July to November and a series of matches from, you know, the Bash, then they had a match at the Clash, then October, Halloween Havoc. And then this was the final chapter. If you were to write a book about a great wrestling feud, Funk Flair would have been it. I mean, different chapters, just one of my all time favorite feuds with Flair. And probably my favorite feud with Flair over some more popular ones, just because I appreciate the stiffness and the difference of the match versus typical Flair, scientific, boring Steamboat matches. And I said it. So just great, 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 great set of matches.
Excellent. And next, young man.
Warrior Savage from Mania 7 is probably the quintessential Savage Warrior match. Again, great storytelling starting right before the Royal Rumble when Sherry got on her hands and knees and looked like she was performing fellatio on the Warrior to get Savage a match. very unique build at the time, very provocative. Then they go into the Royal Rumble and they cost him the match against Slaughter, which is the only way Slaughter was ever going to win a world title, by the way. What a shit show that was. And then right into WrestleMania in a retirement match, and just the perfect gel of storytelling, match. You had the great happy ending with Elizabeth. And I'm a self-professed not Elizabeth fan, by the way. but the storytelling at the end of them reuniting was really, really good and really well done. And again, just a perfect feud with a good start and a great bookend. And you just can't beat those kind of matches. So
heart of stone if you don't cry at the end.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then there's always that iconic picture of the lady with the curly hair, face is all red, and she's crying. It's iconic,
What's your guy, Rory? What's he called again?
Rain Hat.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be the most emotional moment in a wrestling match.
Up till that time, 100% it was. The only other one I could relate it to was after Magnum TA's accident, he's coming out at the Crockett Cup the year after that.
Yeah.
So that would probably been my first one. This would have been my second one.
Go for it. Sorry, mate. Go for it.
All right, I'm trying. Yeah, I know. I'm trying not to take up a lot of time. So the next one, a lot of, as much time as you want. A lot of people are going to scratch their head at this one, and you always hear on the Vintage Vault, they talk a lot about Ron Garvin in like '89, '90, and you know he's usually in dopey matches. He had a really great feud with Valentine. I think that's what he's most remembered for. But he had such a great series of matches with Ric Flair. If I were to say a top 10 wrestler in the NWA, WCW during a time that I was really into it, I would say Garvin would have been probably top five for me. He was stiff. He had great feuds. His matches with Flair were just beat the shit, chop out of each other. And then when he won the title in September of 87 in Detroit, I don't think anyone saw it coming. And it was kind of a storybook thing there, too. It started out with Jimmy Garvin, who Jimmy Garvin I just can't stand. He's terrible. started with Jimmy Garvin and that whole feud around Precious. Then it moved in, and so Flair beat him in a cage. Then it moved into Garvin, you know, standing up for his brother and his family, and just tremendous. He won it in September, lost it back, unfortunately, in November, and unfortunately his title reign is really, really shit on because they didn't book him right, and he took time off after winning the title so that they could get to the Starrcade rematch. But a very underrated wrestler in Ronnie Garvin, and Garvin Flair cage match September 87 was a culmination of about 2 years worth of matches for me. So if you ever got a chance to go watch that series of matches, do it.
I have not seen that match. I'll have to go back and look at that one.
Definitely watch any Ron Garvin in the 80s if you're doing greatest wrestling matches in WCW. He's got a lot.
I was about to say, I need to do some Garvin research, to be fair.
Yep. The next one. If I could put on a pedestal at this point in time, when this came out in 89, the two greatest tag teams for me of all time, it would have been the Hart Foundation and Tully and Arn, and their match at SummerSlam 89 was a dream match for me at the time, and still to this day, it's the quintessential tag team match for me. The Hart Foundation was my all-time favorite WWF. Brainbusters was my all-time favorite NWA WCW. So I'm not going to say a lot about that match, but the opening at SummerSlam 89 was probably the best thing I could have asked for 16-year-old Sean. So think about it. I got to see Bash 89. Then in SummerSlam, I get to see my two favorite teams of all time wrestle in a WWF ring. Can't even convey that.
It was one of my last cuts for my top 100 was that match.
And that's fair. I mean, I think it's a top 100. Do I think it's the greatest of all time? No, but I think it's definitely a top 100.
That's the whole point of this, Sean. It's like say, it's your favorite. It's not necessarily the best.
Exactly. It's one that it comes on, I'll watch it every time because I just enjoy the wrestling. And then last but not least, leads us to, I think, what we're going to watch live. And just to give some background on this match. So 1987, Randy Savage is primarily remembered for WrestleMania 3 and his feud with Ricky Steamboat. Now, I'm going to be fair. I know those of you that talk to me a lot, I typically shit on Steamboat Savage at Mania. but for that time period, 1987, it was one of the greatest matches of all time. For context, for me, what ruins it is the George Steele involvement. And quite frankly, all the outside interference and all the bullshit, kind of ruins Savage or Steamboat's moment, because technically Savage should have won. If there was no George Steele, Savage would have won. And if you're trying to put over a baby face with the heel, I just think it was booked all wrong. That doesn't mean it wasn't a good match. It's just not my cup of tea. So I think that's a fair assessment, right? It's not just me saying it sucks. It's shit, right? but what I will tell you is in October, Savage was starting to turn baby face. Steamboat left and lost his title 2 months later or 3 months later to the Honky Tonk Man, which at the time for me was one of the most shocking things I had ever seen in my entire wrestling life. Honky Tonk Man was awful, and to see him win the Intercontinental title over Steamboat just made me so mad that Savage lost the title to Steamboat to begin with, only to give it over to Honky Tonk Man. So they started building this feud with Savage and Honky Tonk, and they built to, I think it was October, Saturday Night Main Event, right? Or was it September Main Event? I can't remember which one it was. So they finally got to the Honky Tonk Savage match at the Saturday Night Main Event. And I was all fired up. I was so ready to watch Savage just beat Honky Tonk Man. And then all of a sudden, Bret Hart comes out and just ruins the whole match. It's a DQ. It's a big schmoz. So it sets up this match we're about to watch in the November 87 Saturday Night main event of Hart versus Savage, which to me is a quintessential Randy Savage match of 1987, and also gave us a peek under the tent of how great Bret Hart was going to be.
Oh, yes.
So that's my assessment. That's my assessment. Two of the greatest of all time in a very early match that shows the greatness of both of them. Love this match.
Let's do
all-time hidden gem.
65th greatest match of all time. Official, my list.
There I was literally just about to ask you, where did you place it?
65.
And that's fair, right? I think that's fair. I mean, it's a quintessential 87, but it's not Savage's greatest match, but it is a great match in 1987 for him. Yeah.
Let's all enjoy it together. Fantastic picks, my friend.
Thank you.
Yes, very excellent pick, Sean. That pains me to say that, but excellent picks.
Yeah, I guess I know you're disappointed because you wanted them all to be shit takes, but I really do watch some good wrestling. So,
okay, for those of you who want to watch along with us, we are starting at the Hart Foundation interview beforehand. So the timestamp I got is 11 minutes 22 seconds.
Yep, I'm there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're ready.
I'm literally just about to say, are you there, Callum?
I'm just going to catch up here. Yep, that's me now.
Okay, gentlemen, if we're all ready, in 3, 2, 1, play.
Well, the bulky Brett at this point, is he not?
Yeah, he's a little bloaty. Yeah, face is a little plumped up, right?
I mean, Brett aged, didn't he? I mean, I've never changed. Brett just looks like a 20-year-old kid.
He does. Like a little baby face, right?
He's 30 at this point as well.
Really?
Yeah.
And he clearly shaves his body hair because he's like, I don't know, he's got no hair at all. Versus the Anvil, who's a big hairy mess.
Yeah, Anvil probably doesn't shave his body hair. We hope.
Yeah. Yeah, I would probably say
what were they starting from if he does, you know?
I miss these Saturday night main events. They were
Saturday's main events, one of the things I'm surprised they didn't bring back with the network. You can throw it out, stick a couple of matches on from any random arena you're in.
Yeah. Oh, here we go.
But it's a time frame thing, too. Saturday night main event in this time frame with the stars it had. Maybe, here you go. This is the Hershey Park.
I'm surprised with the network that they don't include more house shows. I know they do
a few. Don't worry about that anymore. No more house
shows. Well, no.
But yeah, there's a lot. Like Madison Square Garden, Philly. Like, there's so many other house shows. You hear it on The Vault. They do MSG, but there's so many other ones out there during that time frame.
Yeah. Liz with the quintessential 80s perm.
Yes.
Giving Liz a whole sentence there.
But I never knew I never knew I wanted a Macho Man baby face until this feud.
Skiing shirts.
He just looks great, doesn't he? I mean, that is magnificence.
That's the boy right there.
The robe. I guess we could all be y'all thankful for Steamboat going home because his wife told him he had to. Only to repeat the same thing in 1989.
Oh, dear old Bonnie.
Good old Bonnie. Good old Bonnie ruined everything for Steamboat.
I mean, you do wonder what kind of career he would have had if, like, Bonnie wasn't around.
Yeah. F them wives.
Steamboat's been...
I mean, he did all right, don't get me wrong, but...
He's been around the block, Steamboat. He's married three times.
Really? Is he like Boris?
That's not today, please.
Okay.
There they are. What is that expression on his face?
He's got no help to protect Elizabeth. Oh, tremendous King Kong Bundy main event with the Hulkster later.
Main event anywhere in the country.
Indeed.
And why is Brian Bosworth even... Why did they even show this guy on here? He has nothing to do with this match. Big-time football player at the time.
Mainstream publicity and all that. I thought we got old Jack Kruger as the ref for this one, or Angry Ref, as he is known in some circles. Look at those graphics. Look at those.
As I say, those graphics are tremendous.
I missed
those. Look at that one.
The Hulkster.
Coked out savage.
That all makes sense now. I think you're a bit ahead of us, actually, there.
Yeah, I think so.
Now there's Brian Bosworth. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're a few seconds ahead of us, Sean.
Okay, I'll pause. Which,
only a few seconds.
I'm at 16:09. I'll wait till you get there.
Oh, we're about 30 seconds ahead. I'm at 15:39.
Yeah.
I'll let you know when we're there. We've got the inset promo from Honky at the moment.
From the IC champ.
15:49. Liz doing the Liz face again.
Yeah, I mean, Liz doesn't actually, like, exude I have confidence in my mind because she always looks really, really frightened.
16:09 now. Let's play.
All right, I'm on. We're good.
It might be that she's frightened of Randy, to be fair.
Yeah, there's probably not much acting going on there. Considering she was probably...
It's a mismatch. Elizabeth and Savage is like... That doesn't look like a couple you would expect to see ever.
3 minutes before this, she was probably still locked in the closet, so, you know.
I was just about to say, she's just literally come out the closet and seen all these people.
Savage's personality, you would expect a bunch of hookers and cocaine on him, you know. He's out there. Great start to the match.
99 Savage is a lot more like you expect him to be.
Yes. Gorgeous George, yes.
See, they just, I love this one. They're actually fighting over an Irish whip. That's the kind of stuff I want to see. And don't see it enough these days. I'm getting my walker out now.
Well, you notice my time frame of wrestling. It's definitely a niche for sure.
Look at Kruger getting involved there. Oh!
He looks like he could have been in Goodfellas.
Yeah.
But even here with Brett, you can see it, can't you? It's at this point, it's more than just coming with Brett. It's he could have gone into singles earlier than he did. I mean, obviously, there was the failed push. Well, not failed is the wrong word. The aborted push, let's say, the year after this.
Well, this is a preliminary to what they were trying to get to in 88 and Mania 4, right?
Definitely.
And then he got like a lot of time limit draws with Bad News. I think he had a couple draws with Mr. Perfect. And then they just stopped. And it took him years again to get back up to what we see here and what his capability was. It's really an interesting... It's really interesting to watch his career over time.
Even here, he's working in the guardrail bump. We'd see a lot of that over the years to come.
Yeah, I think he broke his... Did he break his chest bone or something in the match? I think
that's... Yeah. A match against Dino Bravo.
Of course. Dino Bravo. Also in the Mafia. We got a lot of good tie-ins on tonight's show.
Far too many.
We've done well.
Oh, go on, Anvil, get in there.
Do you ever look at Anvil and now all you see is Natty and cats?
All the time.
I think Natty looks, or people look at the Anvil and just go, thank God she looks like her mum.
I don't know. Have you seen her mom lately?
Great timing on the shot there with the megaphone as Savage came down with the axe handle.
Yes.
Go on, Liz, you know you want it, though. Why is he backing away from the Anvil there?
I think I'm one of the few people in place to be who doesn't hate on Natty as much as he probably should. I'm just very indifferent to her. Jeez. I know, like, Scott just outright hates her.
She's not a bad wrestler.
No, she's not.
her social media presence and her cat. She's just a terrible actress. She's a great wrestler.
If you've ever watched Total Divas, you'll be a big fan of Natty. You'll be more of a fan of Tyson, to be fair. Tyson Kidd is excellent.
I'm a big fan of Natty's sister. they actually have a YouTube show, her and her sister, and her sister is quite the beauty.
Right, the hot.
There was a few episodes in Total Divas where the sister moved in. Comedy is Jews.
They tried to fix her up with Big E.
That's the best episode ever.
Yes.
they try and get Big E to take her out of the house and end up with Big E in their hot tub.
All right, Miss Pile Driver.
Oh, look at that.
So good. Dear.
That's a pile driver.
So good.
That is a pile driver. Wow.
And snaps into the cover straight away.
I bet that felt just like a pile driver.
Humor me a little bit.
Very good.
You guys be honest. Savage Steamboat compared to what we're watching right now. No, I'm trying to be serious. Right now, I'm trying to be serious. There's no comparison to me. Nobody wants to take a stand, I see.
Silence speaks volumes here.
Wow.
I've only got Savage Steamboat 34 places higher than this one in my list, if that helps.
Too high.
I only had it at 33.
I only had it at 3.
You had Savage Steamboat at 3?
At 3.
Alright, I'm done. Call's over.
I will hazard a guess that there's more than a few people who had it at number 1.
Yes.
One person certainly did.
Yes, he did.
Lovely axe handle there by Savage. And see, hooks the... Oh, God. Even the way Savage just hooks the leg.
I mean, I think I said it during those shows, though. I did weight things a bit differently. So it's probably as good a match technically, I'd say, from what the bits we've seen. But the Savage Steamboat was just so much more important. And under that big... You know, with that big crowd with the title on the line, and I was waiting things like that. So, you know, and I don't want to disparage this match, but you know, on a random Saturday night main event versus, you know, the second biggest match on the biggest pay per view of all time, I'm going to go with the match on the pay per view.
That's a fair assessment. I agree with you guys on that.
The one thing I love when it does this. I love that.
Great someone needs to bring that move back.
The one thing that I'll, as long as it's not Seth Rollins, the one thing that I will give this one is that obviously this is a big opportunity for Brett. So that'll add to this match that he's going to not fully remembering the result, although guess what it's going to be. Brett's going to want to make sure he gets a good showing.
Definitely. Which brings us on to the injury to Savage here, because apparently Brett and Savage had a very specific match worked out. Then Vince came to them with, he was wanted to build one around this injury to Savage's foot. And yes. Brett said, well, we've got this match worked out. What are we supposed to do? And Vince, being Vince, says to Brett, well, you're the great worker. You work it out.
And he did.
He most certainly did. And I think that's, you know, that's why I've probably got this match ranked so high. And because not only the in-ring action, just Brett's own
storytelling
and work of the psychology, and obviously you've got all that built in with Savage being Savage anyway. It's all there. It's such a
crisp match. Like if you've never watched pro wrestling before and you're not one of those, oh, it's fake baloney bullshit, you would watch this match and say, wow, they beat the shit out of each other, mm-hmm. and it looked really legit and real. It's so crazy.
Mm.
And Savage going over that rope the way he did, like he just flipped over upside down and he sold that so well.
Yeah, that's how you do it. I mean, that's just a backdrop. And yeah, he's took it like death itself. You know, that's what I mean. That's what great wrestling is, kids.
It's just little things, isn't it? Look at that, like he's took the boot off. Just little things.
And Elizabeth taking a boot off for him. She never gets involved, but she took the boot off. I mean, just great storytelling.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And there's just things like that. So he get thrown over the ropes and he's hurt himself. That that could happen. Accidents happen. Like, I don't understand why they don't use that more. The amount of times, like, well, for me, I might be quite clumsy, but the amount of times I'm just walking along and you like, and you trip, or you don't see a hole in the ground and you fall in it, roll an ankle, has happened to me before, because I've got an uneven path, you just down I go. Accidents happen.
And the flip over the rope like that in 87, that was a big, that's a big move. Big move.
Yeah, yeah.
And his leg, it's like not quote Jack Campbell again, but the leg work in this match is legit great leg work.
And it's like Sean said earlier on, you know, this is Savage dipping his toe into being the babyface for the first time, isn't it? So little sort of thing like a move like that, you know, where he might not get sympathy before, he's going to get sympathy now for it.
Spinning Tahoe by the Hitman here.
As much as I've got opinions on Bret Hart the person, I'll never ever criticise Bret Hart the wrestler. As soon as the bell rings, there's everything in this match I've noticed. Like, there's nothing, there's no wasted motion. Everything they do to the smallest movement has got meaning behind it.
And I don't know if you just said it. Savage's pinfalls when he covers somebody are like, you never see people pin people like that anymore.
No.
Trying to get that steel, like, he's so tight on it.
Look how deep he hooked the leg there. Make sure it's right in the middle of the ring. That's one other thing I love about Savage as well, is that he would go for pinfalls off everything. That's realistic. You'd do that, wouldn't you? If you knock somebody down with, I don't know, a shoulder block or something, you know, you'd make an attempt to try to see if you could keep them down for a three count. Lost art, I tell you.
It is.
Lost art.
It is.
You'd like
Boston Crab here.
You'd like to think that being a WWE contracted wrestler, an independent contractor. one of the corporate perks would get the network free of charge. With all the time that these guys are traveling, would you not think you'd be asking them to go back and watch people like watch matches like this and just go, yeah, watch that, try and implement that, because these guys know what they're doing.
Absolutely right.
I would think on film class and NXT, for those that come in, this would be one of the matches that they would watch. That's how I think, like you just said.
It's a TV match. Look at that.
Where did he get that finish from?
And what a great, simple finish, right? Great, simple finish.
Yeah.
Catch him off the
nowhere. Out of nowhere as well.
Works at any event. Oh, Jimmy.
and the other good thing about this match, it's not overly long, and it just gets right to the point and keeps your attention the whole time.
And even here, Savage is still selling that leg, by the way.
And I didn't need 20 covers at a Mania 3 main event with George Steele interfering. I didn't need any of that. I need what I got here.
And look how invested the crowd are in it as well. They don't need to be chanting two after every pinfall. They're into it.
What a doozy.
And to think at this point, they were building them to challenge the Honky Tonk Man at WrestleMania 4, allegedly.
the decision had not been made at this point. Mm. Far from it.
They just don't book baby faces like they did Savage from 87 to 88. They just don't do it anymore.
No.
Yeah. He's tough and he's got guts, but he's relatable. He clearly exists on a different plane because he's Macho Man Randy Savage, but you know, he's an extension. He's not a cartoon character.
And how long the feuds play out too? You don't get a match every week with the same people to sell a feud. It's a story that lasts months and months and months, and you're entrenched in it the whole freaking time. They just don't do stuff like that anymore. Oh, and they're fat buns.
That's a description for another day. But you know, it's like, especially now, you know, with 5 hours of filling time every week. You just don't let anything build anymore.
No, you don't. So there's just so much to love about that match, and that's why it's my hidden gem and one of my all-time favorite, probably underrated matches that people don't talk about enough.
Some of excellent us do, Sean. Pick. Some of us. Some of us have, but hopefully more of us now will. If only four people would listen to us, eh?
Well, I try in the chat. I try in the chat all the time, but we're giving 6 stars to horse shit. I don't know.
Excellent.
Oh man!
Wow, that was fun.
Thank you, Sean.
Yes, thank you for bestowing that upon us.
You're welcome. That was a lot of fun.
That was excellent. So, I think that's now the end of the live watch. I think it's time that we wrap up now. Although I do seem to have, in my very professional running order, a blank space before I've got finish. So, I think I should hand it over to the Booker man to see what we do to fill that space. Ben, do you get any thoughts?
Thank you, Callum. I've a little thought. I've got a bit of an announcement to make. The authorities and the leadership at Place to Be Nation have very kindly decided to give me a second podcast.
How have you managed to convince them to do that?
I have absolutely no idea. Bribery is a wonderful thing.
They'll give 2 shows on here to anybody these days.
Wow, yes.
Well, clearly, it's trying to branch out international, so they're trying to extend their TV deal, apparently.
Oh, so the two, you're the Jinder Mahal WWE champions.
So, we have decided to call it The Chicken Salad. That is the name of the podcast. And you might be thinking to yourself, The Chicken Salad, what has that got to do with wrestling? Well, we are basically, it's going to be part analysis, part experiment. We are going to see if we can turn chicken shit into chicken salad. We are going to be watching some of the worst shows of all time, or the perceived worst shows of all time, to see if there's any good to be taken from them. And when I say we, I mean myself, I mean Logan Crosland, and I mean perennial guest star, now getting his own podcast, Mr. Sean Kidd, will be joining me on every episode.
I am so excited for this podcast. And, you know, the main reason is, who better to turn chicken shit into chicken salad than the king of chicken shit Tank? So I am so honored to be on this. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're looking forward to it. Are you going to announce the first watch, or are you going to say
yes?
That?
Yes, we'll do that. So our first show, we are picking the gold standard of a bad wrestling show. So if you said to somebody, a wrestling fan of reasonable knowledge, what is the worst show of all time, I will guarantee that 9 out of 10 will pick The Great American Bash in 1991. That is going to be our first show.
Oh, dear.
Talk about swinging for the fence.
We're starting hot, boys.
We're starting it with the bang. You got to go the big bang first time out, and that's what we're going for.
Well, yeah.
The theory needs testing straight away. You know what I mean?
Oh, if you're going to use that as a concept, you might as well start at the bottom.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, there was 2 shows that got mentioned. One was that. The other one was December to Dismember. I was like, well, I've already watched that.
Yeah, that's good.
That's always good. It's always good to have another watch stuff.
We'll do that. We'll keep that one in the fire. But yeah, so coming soon to the Place to Be Nation. Hopefully, fingers crossed, we're recording tomorrow night. So hopefully next week or the week after, it will be ready to be listened to.
Excellent stuff. Well, it's definitely interesting. I say that for you guys having to live it, but definitely an interesting route to go. I'll look forward to listening to it.
We've got a variety of good takes. We're not going to mince our words. So if something's still is shit, we will say it's shit. We're not going to be like, Oh yeah, this is interesting. No. If it's rubbish, it's going to still be rubbish.
And you say we have interesting takes. That's obviously you and Logan.
yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I'll leave it alone at this point.
Oh well, I look forward to that.
Yes. And then as well. Sorry, I can't discuss too many details just yet, but there might be another. I'm stretching myself very thin. Fortunately, there's a lot of meat to stretch, but I might be going on to the pop feed. That might be happening.
Ben, you're a key worker. You're keeping this country going just now. Can you afford to do all this?
I've got to do something with my nights though. You know what I mean?
But for the sake of the country, Ben.
Yes. All I will say is it combines two of my favourite things, television and a cup of tea.
Oh, I like the concept already.
That's as far as we can go with the preview. We're in the very early stages of development, so I won't say any more just yet.
I've just looked up the thing. I've just looked up the quote from The Godfather. Obviously, you've gone to Scott to ask him for the favour to go on the wrestling feed. And he's like, someday, and that day may never come, Ben, I will call upon you to do a service for me. But until that day, accept this justice as my gift to you on my Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network.
Did you have to virtually kiss Scott's hand too at the end of that dialogue?
he got the ring there.
All right.
He went on Zoom when I kissed the webcam.
He was like, he got the ring. And he said, "You must like Shawn versus Triple H from Bad Blood."
And then he goes, "Thank you, Podfather." And then you got up and walked out.
As Logan's outside going, "I hope your first child will be a masculine child." When they look a Bratzy character. I know, good stuff, guys, good stuff. Well, I hope you manage to last a while on that, and the concept doesn't beat you into submission.
It's a mindset. The first watch was fun for me, so I think it's going to be a cool concept for sure.
Yes. Very much looking forward to it.
Yep.
Good stuff. So if you get anything else to plug, Ben, or other than your many, many, many new podcasts?
Not at the moment. I'm hopeful that I'll get another Unpopular Opinion done. Basically, as you sort of alluded to, the whole key worker thing has sort of took a back seat. I've been sort of writing lots of quizzes for friends and family, so my actual writing has got to third place. So hopefully I'll be back on it soon enough.
You broke the internet the last time, so you need time for it to calm down.
That's true.
Rory, anything from yourself?
No, oh, you've quite finished, have you? Yeah, I'm here too. Okay, so, yeah, I also have a show on the Place to Be Poppy. I actually got there first in having two shows. And even then, you can't escape him because Ben Locke will be a guest on the latest edition of that said show, which is called Senior Video, in which I trawl, and I do mean trawl, through the home video classic section of the WWE Network, reviewing all, I intend to, all 70, however long it takes, Coliseum video rips, which are now available on the network for all of us to enjoy. Of course, Callum, you joined me on episode one, where we looked at UK Rampage 93. Ben and I do some house building with the Bushwhackers, looking at Smack-a-Whack-a. That one should be dropping on the feed any day now after this goes live. Just watch out for that one every month or so. And my alma mater of podcasting, the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, I made another appearance on there this week reviewing Backlash 2000. That's Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, still very much going. I've taken a bit of a backseat day to day running off that, but you'll still hear me every so often on there every couple of months. But the boys are still running that one wherever you get your podcast, the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast.
Although you've now taken a backseat and you're now sort of the Undertaker your Bill Goldberg, you're picking your moments, you're coming in when it suits you for all the good stuff. There's going to be no sold out 1997s anymore.
Just, coming back for the good shows, you know, the part timer coming back for Backlash 2000. Like,
you'll come back for the good shows, you'll come back for Backlash 2000, you'll come back for WrestleMania 17, you'll do all the good ones.
Takes all the credit when it's good, and then when it's bad, no, nothing to do with me.
Sean, anything else from yourself? Are you going to be guesting on any other shows coming up?
Yeah, so obviously the new pod with Ben and Logan, which I'm excited for. I did another pod with Logan. I do a lot of the sit-ins on the left in theater ones, the special ones that Andy's doing. I did Police Academy by myself because Ben overslept like he does all the time. Just Friends with Logan recently, which is also a fun watch. I think Ben slept through that one too. I have two upcoming things coming up as well. I have a Pet Sematary Freak Out Drive-In with Jenny coming up, which was a lot of fun, real fun watch, great movie. And then I'm actually going to, like someone else on this pod, be on the Ruthlessly Aggressive pod probably in about a couple weeks. So I'll be doing that pod as well.
Good stuff. I must say that the going back to watch the stuff on for Ruthlessly Aggressive, it's difficult to say. It was a lot of fun. It was interesting going back to the old brand split time. But
yeah, I've already started watching. I started watching the episodes that have already been done and to get up to the ones I'm doing, and it's definitely an interesting time frame that nobody really watches anymore. No. So,
I lucked out with a really good SmackDown, so yeah. I'm still going to keep watching along with it because underappreciated time frame on that one. Mm-hmm. For myself, I am just going to be on the special relations as it goes. I may be trying to tie in with Scott and Dr. G on an NWA special that might not necessarily be on the wrestling feed, so keep an eye out for that. It's taking a lot of prep, but it could hopefully it'll be a lot of fun. It'll come out quite well. I'll just leave it at that. So it's all go for the four of us. So
busy, busy boys.
We are. I think it was Andy said on the Great Debate, Quarantine's Got Talent, and we're certainly trying to. We're making the most of it. So yes, so you can find us the Special Relations show at PTBN Special Rail 1 on Twitter if you want to speak to me directly about anything relating to Scottish football, as there may be a few rants about that coming up just now, considering it's a complete and utter shit show, worse than wrestling in Florida. You can reach me at Callum7McDougall on the Twitter. So contact us all directly or at the show, and we'll be more than happy to oblige with any questions, criticism that you may have, because we're open to criticism. We'll take it on the chin. We're thick-skinned here over the pond. So from Ben and Rory and our special guest Sean, thank you very much for listening. Everybody, please stay safe, and we'll catch you the next time.
Oh, I forgot. Anyway, Sean, so this is why I think WrestleMania 17 is so good.
And the time is upon us, Paul.
The time is now. It's the match that both men need to win, and neither man can afford to lose.
Cold Steve Austin will be in the main event at WrestleMania.
Oh, hell yeah!
It's over. The Rock is the WWE champion. The Rock is going to WrestleMania. 60,000 in the Astrodome. See the Rock, Stone Cold.
You think you're special? You do. I can see it in your